Karlsson, Karlsson, världens bästa Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, hoj här kommer Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, ingen faktiskt, ingen annan Karlsson spelar jag så bra som mig.
Karlsson, Karlsson, Karlsson scores!
Karlsson, Karlsson, världens bästa Karlsson.
Vackra, snilla, Karlsson. Yes! Welcome everybody to another episode of the Keeping Karlsson Fantasy Hockey Podcast, the best fantasy hockey podcast in the world, hosted by two guys, owner Eric Karlsson, in their keeper pools. I got through it. It's okay. I'm your host, Elon Dubrovsky, and with me, as always, is my very good friend, the fantasy hockey robot, the poobah of prognostication. You guys all know him better, though, as Brian Calm.
Hello, Elon. Hello, everyone. If you don't watch the YouTube version of the show, and why would you? Because it's full of mistakes and silly moments. But Elon's face during the yes today alone makes it worth it. We don't have keepingcarlson.com/live to get to our YouTube channel. Check it out.
Okay.
Like, well, and subscribe. 5-star review.
Okay, yes. Come for the silly faces, but stay for the fantasy hockey content, because we've got a ton to get to today. It's now 2 weeks in, not even, like a week and a half in, one full fantasy matchup in by the time you listen to this on Monday, and already people are freaking out, and for good reason, because a lot of the players we invested heavily on in our drafts are disappointing us. So Brian, we're going to start the show today with a big bummer, and I'm going to go through a bunch of players who are doing absolutely nothing, and I'll ask you to decide whether or not we can let go of them, or if we need to hold on and hope for better things. Before we get to that, let's of course start by mentioning that we are presented by DauberHockey.com, the top fantasy hockey website out there. I'm going there every day for the tools, you know, the daily line combinations. You've got just starting goalies, plus articles. Like, everything you need is at Frozen Tools, and then the articles at Dauber Hockey. It's the best. Check it out, DauberHockey.com. You need to be using that site if you want to do well in fantasy hockey. IMHO. Let's start in San Jose, Brian, with a Sharks team that is now 1-4 going into their game tonight versus Calgary. And with a cold streak like this, a bunch of their players are putting their owners on tilt. Let's start with Tomáš Hertl, 0 points in 5 games. He's been playing big top line, top power play minutes, but nothing is going in for him. He has 13 shots, which puts him on pace, actually, for 213 shots in the year, which would actually be his career high, but 0 points so far puts him on pace for 0 points on the year, which is very far below his 74 points last year. He's slated to play with Kane and LeBanc tonight. Do you think that by the time people listen to this podcast, Hertl will have already broken out of this funk, or is there actually something really concerning going on?
There's nothing really concerning going on except what he's actually contributing to his fantasy owners' teams, which is absolutely nothing, right? It's really sad for anyone who owns Hertl. Hopefully you drafted him, you got excited, and you should have been. And he's actually doing some really great things under the hood. Tomáš Hertl is on track for all kinds of career highs so far. Minutes, shots, shot attempts, expected goals, but of course, 0 points to show for it, and it's a great example of what can happen in a small sample and just how misleading the small sample at the start of a season can be, especially when, you know, the scoring is looking wonky right out of the gate and you just can't look back to last week for memories of happier times. For Tomáš Hertl, you've got to look back 6 months to get those memories of happy times, but please look back 6 months, look back a year, and just remember how great a hockey player Tomáš Hertl is, because I look at the numbers beneath the 0 points in scoring that Hertl has provided, and I see no cause for concern. In fact, I see a great buy low candidate, right? I am really looking forward, by the way. You said he's playing with Kane and LeBanc tonight. That'll be so great for Tomáš Hertl. He's had some really weird line mates to start the year. Lien Bergman, Lucas Radil, Barclay Goodrow. These are the guys that Hertl's been playing with. And it looks like the Sharks are still trying to figure out exactly what post-Pavelski life looks like for them. And even post-Donskoy, for that matter, right? You've got two members of their top 6 or 9 suddenly out of the picture. And they really didn't have a suitable replacement come in and join the team instead. And so we've seen the Sharks scrambling and blending their lines and struggling to find out exactly how to configure and calibrate their top 6 or top 9. And I don't think the effect of all that shuffling has been lost on guys like Tomáš Hertl, who continue to struggle to get on the score sheet. But Hertl owners, He's playing really well, okay? Don't give up yet. Better than ever, actually, if you're looking at his rate stats and all the numbers that generally lead to points being scored. So as Sam Cook's hockey-loving cousin once said, I know the points are going to come for Tomáš Hertl.
Okay, great. So that's nice to hear if you're a Hertl owner, and maybe good advice to buy low. I'm actually curious, Brian, as we go through this, I'm very interested to see if there will even be any players that I talk about that you'll say, okay, yeah, let go of them. Because you're always of the mindset that you hold on to the guys you drafted, you give them a chance, you're always talking about small sample sizes, and this isn't a knock. This is the way you play fantasy, and you usually win.
You drafted these guys for a reason, right? You watched them last year and the year before, however many years before. You did your research over the summer. Don't let yourself get thrown off by a 3 to 5 game sample size, especially if you're looking beyond just goals and assists and seeing, oh yeah, Hurdle's playing like another 2 minutes a night at even strength, and he's taking more shots on goal than ever, putting more pucks towards the net than ever. It's all going to be okay. He's the player you thought he was. He just hasn't been able to show you yet.
All right, fair enough. So we'll go and we'll see when we hit our first player that Brian says, okay, yeah, you can let go of him. A couple more Sharks I want to bring up. Timo Meier. Finally picked up an assist in the 5-4 win over the Blackhawks on Thursday for his first point on the year in 5 games. He's been playing on line 1 with Couture. And in the last game, Patrick Marleau, who we'll get to soon, he assisted on a Marleau goal. He has had 4 or 5 shots in each of his last 3 games. But on the negative side, he hasn't been on the top power play. That's something we kind of expected him to take when we saw that Pavelski left for Dallas. But no, it's been Evander Kane who's gotten the opportunity, at least since he's came back from his suspension. So Timo Meier not getting that power play time, which maybe puts a damper on his upside, and right now obviously that puts a big damper considering he's not giving you many points otherwise. Kevin LeBanc, how you brought up before, also got his first point of the season when he scored against Corey Crawford on the power play on Thursday. He has 17 shots overall in 5 games at this point, but he's been playing in the bottom 6 for a lot of this season. But like I said, he's now slated to play with Kane and Hertl today, according to a tweet from Curtis Pashelka. So okay, Brian, thoughts on Meier or LeBanc? Are these the same as Hertl, like worth targeting if they've been dropped and definitely worth holding if you have them, or is there reason to expect any of them to continue being in for a tough season?
Let me start with Timo Meier, who, yes, we are all very sad he's not on the top power play, but what is great and will help cheer you up is that Timo Meier's shots are still coming, and he's playing with Logan Couture at 5-on-5. And last year, we all remember that Timo Meier nearly paced for 70 points without top power play deployment. So really, like, obviously, Elon, you've already identified it. We're not surprised that this is already a theme this episode, that there isn't anything here to get too worried about. Is it a bummer that we haven't seen Timo Meier get on the top power play this year that we hoped would happen, and then that would help take his production to the next level? Yeah, of course it's a bummer. But is his season going to be made or broken by that top power play deployment? I don't think so, right? And also, if anybody's really holding their breath for Meier getting on the top power play, there's still a good chance, right, that they're going to shuffle the deck, especially because San Jose is just 3-for-20 on the power play so far this year. That's a 15% conversion rate, which isn't awful, but it's also not very good. So maybe that poor conversion rate can continue just long enough for the coaching staff to say, how about we try Timo on the top power play unit? And then hopefully he solves all the problems and the Sharks convert on 100% of their power plays with him on it. And then you also asked me about Kevin LeBanc, who is another guy who's getting like blended around this Sharks lineup in 5 games so far. I'm seeing 4 of them in which LeBanc played at least a couple shifts with 5 or more different line mates. That's crazy. What are you supposed to develop with anyone when you're being moved? Like, right, the standard is you play with 2 guys the whole game at even strength, maybe a 3rd guy for a couple shifts here and there, but 5 or more in 4 of your 5 games? Come on. Come on, Sharks coaching staff. Give Kevin some consistent line mates and chemistry. The upshot, by the way, of LeBanc's deployment so far, while he's getting blended around with line mates, his time on ice has increased, as we'd hoped, by 2 whole minutes at 5-on-5. And beyond that, the good news is that not only has LeBanc held his rate stats, they've actually gone up. Again, we're talking about a small sample, so even the positive things we need to be a little gun-shy about and say, well, we don't know this is going to last. And it's not always a slam dunk that a player can maintain their rate stats when their deployment grows the way LeBanks has and likely, well, should sustainably grow too. But early returns are nice to see Kevin LeBanks so far flourishing in the extra time that he's finally being given to play.
I mean, I guess you say flourishing because of these underlying stats, obviously not on the score sheet. But you're saying, again, another hold. Okay, this guy, though, Brian, come on. Martin frickin' Jones, what are people supposed to do about him? He's got an .854 save percentage, a 4.55 goals against average through three games that he's played so far. No wins, which was the one thing we were supposed to be able to depend on from Martin Jones. He's not even giving you that. Turns out it's hard to win games when you're letting in 4 or 5 goals per contest. Then, of course, I guess the one nice thing you could say about Martin Jones is that maybe he doesn't have a lot of competition from Aaron Dell because he hasn't been much better. He has an .884 save percentage through the three games he's played. He came in for a period in the second game versus Vegas. But hey, Dell is the one that got the win in that Chicago game. So Brian, if Jones blows it again tonight, I imagine Martin Jones is going to play tonight once again. I believe it's against Calgary. At that point, can we tell people, because they're going to be listening already tomorrow, can we tell them they could probably let him go, especially if a guy like, say, like, I don't know, Ranta or Grice, like if it's a pretty shallow goalie situation in free agency and some of these, you know, 50-50 guys are available. At what point can you just like let go of Martin Jones, even though you drafted him pretty high, expecting San Jose to be a great team? And they might be a great team, but I just can't imagine Martin Jones being valuable. But hey, I could be wrong.
Big fat oof for Martin Jones and really all the San Jose Sharks to start the season. You're right that the Sharks can't be expected to really succeed when their goalie isn't doing so well, but I think the Sharks need to share the blame with Martin Jones. They're making some dumb mistakes, some high-risk plays early this season, trying to make like the perfect, beautiful play when they need to keep it simple, stupid. You know, and especially the risk for that sort of thing sometimes goes up when you find yourself in a deeper and deeper hole early on. It's never fun, and teams just want to sort of, you know, flash their way out of it. But they haven't been able to so far, and the Sharks, on the whole, have not been doing Martin Jones any favors. They have offered him a .918, a .919, a .913 expected save percentage at 5-on-5 over the last 3 years. This season so far, they are offering Martin Jones an expected save percentage at 5-on-5 of 896. So that's pretty difficult circumstances within which to work. That's sort of like what Jonathan Quick had to work with last year in LA. But of course, Martin Jones is doing what Jonathan Quick did in LA last year, which is play way behind his awful expected save percentage and put up an actual 5-on-5 save percentage of 860. San Jose is going to find it very hard to win as long as that lasts. The tricky part also for anybody owning Jones who's saying, okay, well, the team's going to correct things and he'll settle in too and everything's going to be okay. That would be a thing I'd love to say, except Peter DeBoer has recently stated his desire to use Aaron Dell more if Dell can show that he's capable of it. I was reading this article by Kevin Kurse on The Athletic, and apparently it was the plan to get Dell in more last year, which we also thought would happen, but of course he blew every chance he got, and DeBoer didn't feel comfortable doing it. And then this summer, Aaron Dell stayed in San Jose to practice all summer with their goaltending coach. So this could be a fresh start for Aaron Dell to take another crack at Martin Jones's job, which is really there for the taking, so long as Aaron Dell can play reasonably well. So that would be really unfortunate for Martin Jones if he can't pull it together, if the team in front of him can't pull it together before Dell gets a crack. The worst thing for Martin Jones would be if Aaron Dell doesn't play necessarily any better than Martin Jones. I'm not sure he's capable of being better than Martin Jones, but if Aaron Dell is the one who's in net when San Jose finally rounds out their defensive game and Hurdle gets a goal and LeBanc gets an assist and everybody starts rolling, then maybe Aaron Dell gets to stay a while, right? So that would be the biggest concern for Martin Jones, is that he's in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's one of the biggest concerns. The other one is that he might just be a bad goalie. But
no, he definitely is a bad goalie, but I don't know that Aaron Dell is any better.
Right, yeah, well, maybe there's a goalie in the minors. Maybe there's a Binnington that's going to have to come up and save this team. But for now, scary times as a Jones owner. Feel free to tweet at us at Keeping Carlson if you think you have juicy goalie free agents. I don't know what Brian would say. I have a feeling I might say, like, I don't know, let him go. Maybe give it another week. Let's give it another week, and we'll get to some more goalies as we go. Elon, maybe we can compare them to Jones.
Elon, the Sharks are 1-4, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you expect them to win one out of every five games they play?
No, but I mean, obviously it also depends on your league format. If goals against average and save percentage play into it, I just don't have much faith. Like, I saw the playoffs last year. I had a bet on the Sharks. I was watching all their games. It was very scary to watch. They, like, Jones let in so many goals. The Sharks had to score four or five goals to win every game they won.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Jones might not be a very good NHL goalie, but he's the goalie that the Sharks have, and I think they're forced to use him, and I think they're willing to use him so long as he doesn't blow it completely, which I know is a difficult disclaimer for him to hold up his end of the bargain for.
Yeah, sorry, Brian, I'm getting deja vu from talking about Jake Allen at the start of last season. Sorry about that. Okay, on the plus side, let's say one nice thing about the Sharks. This whole show's been about the Sharks so far. How about Patrick Marleau signing that one-year $700,000 contract and getting into the next game to keep his Iron Man streak going? He played on the top line with Couture and Meyer and scored two goals, including one from the second power play. Brian, is there anything here? Like, Marleau only managed 37 points last year as a 39-year-old on the Leafs. Is it at all possible that he can now somehow be fantasy relevant as a 40-year-old? I mean, you gotta love this deployment at the very least.
I feel like, you know, Marleau is going to be somebody who everyone is trying to add out of free agency right away, right? And I think what I would be doing is seeing, okay, who'd that guy drop to add Patrick Marleau? Who did they let go of to make room for him? Because I don't think Marleau is going to offer the value that so far seems apparent. Like you said, Elon, he's an old guy. Right? He's not going to be setting the world on fire. It's nice that he landed in San Jose, and it's a beautiful story, but I think somewhere between, say, 37 points and 47 points feels right for him this year. I choose those numbers because 37 points is what Patrick Marleau had playing alongside Nazem Kadri and Sammy Kapanen. Oh, not Sammy Kapanen, Kasperi Kapanen, and sometimes Austin Matthews and William Nylander last season. And then 47 points is what Marleau had the year before that, playing with some mix of Kadri, Komarov, and Mitch Marner. Next to Couture and Meyer is a fantastic place to be for Patrick Marleau, but it's not going to be enough to get him up and above 50 points, especially because he's not going to factor in on the power play. I think 20 goals, 20 assists would be a nice season for Patrick Marleau, and I'm not expecting a whole lot more.
Okay, fair enough. So maybe hold off on adding him unless you think you can add him and then maybe swap him really quickly. It's hard to imagine he'll be... I mean, it depends how deep your league is, obviously, but if you're saying that you don't expect more than 50 points, that's probably not fantasy relevant in most formats, aside from a stream here and there. All right, Brian, so fine. We can't drop all of these Sharks just yet. I feel like you've got to at least be ready to give people permission to drop at least some of these god-awful Minnesota Wild players, right? After the 7-4 loss to Pittsburgh yesterday, this team is 0-4, seemingly going nowhere fast. I'm going to go into our backlog and edit out everything I said in the preseason about the Minnesota Wild looking like a potentially sneaky playoff contender. I wish I never said that because this is looking very, very bad. So let's go down the sad list of disappointments so far. And I guess I'll do a reverse Sharks here. Let's start in net with Devan Dubnyk, who has played four games now, sporting an .862 save percentage after being pulled after the fifth goal yesterday versus the Penguins. Leading into the season, we talked about Dubnyk as someone who's maybe only average as a goalie at this point, but is supported by one of the best defenses in the league. Is that no longer the case anymore? Are we just looking now at like another Martin Jones, but with an even smaller chance of winning games? And like the thing is, again, like I said about Jones, but then you said maybe Aaron Dell could challenge. There's no way Alex Stalock challenges Dubnyk for starts, so I imagine Devan Dubnyk is still going to get you starts, which would be the reason to hold on and hope for him to be better, unless we want to start looking at someone like Kaapo Kakkonen in the minors, who potentially has a shot to pull a Binnington. But yeah, what are your thoughts on Dubnyk so far, and what do people do if they drafted him?
I'm so happy that this is the year I decided to stop caring about goaltending skill and just banked on brute forcing my goalie spots and saying, okay, I just want guys who are going to start a lot at like Martin Jones and Devan Dubnyk. Seriously, I've never drafted either of these guys ever. And then I get them both in different leagues and they're both doing a fantastic job of giving me a rash and wanting to swear off all goalies forever and ever and ever. Just, I thought it was a safe play. These guys are going to start 55, 60 games. Their teams have no other choices. And then, of course, they come out laying some really large eggs. And Devan Dubnyk does not have the same, it's the defense excuse as Martin Jones, because Minnesota is still offering Devan Dubnyk their usual top-end goalie protection. This one here is all on Devan Dubnyk, who's posting an .871 5-on-5 save percentage behind a .936 expected save percentage. Yeah, that's a 65-point difference. So that's terrible. awful. Should never happen. And it's probably a small sample thing too, but it's still like, it shouldn't even happen in a sample as big as four games. Get it together, Devin Dubnyk. There are, the plus side is that there are no Dell-like whisperings that Alex Stalock should be getting more games in this year. So Dubnyk owners, I think, have more reason to hold steady than Martin Jones owners, although I think both of them should really just be holding steady right now. Wait for their teams to figure it out. The Wild pride themselves on defensive play, and they're going to keep locking it down. And I think Dubnyk still has time to settle in. You know, it's fun, Elon, you keep mentioning fun to like think of the next Binnington. But even if they did call up one of their minor league goalies or their prospect goalies, there's kind of a difference between this year's Minnesota Wild and last year's St. Louis Blues, and it goes beyond just the goaltending.
Yeah, that's fair. Minnesota definitely a very concerning team at this point, because look at some of their forwards that we thought would do okay doing absolutely nothing. Like, we've got so far one goal, three shots in four games, Zach Parise. So he's doing nothing aside from that one goal. One assist and three shots over. I'm not talking about three shots per game, by the way. Three shots overall in four games. That's Zach Parise. Also three shots in four games for Eric Staal so far. He has one assist. We've got Matt Zuccarello, also three shots overall, pointless in four games. So all three of these guys not doing anything. I'm not, like, you know, no hits, no shots, no blocks, no points. Barf, barf, barf. Parise, Staal, Zuccarello. Oh, and if your lead counts plus minus, we're even talking barf with a little coming out of the other end, if you know what I mean. Like, this is just a disaster right now. Brian, would you be holding on to any of these guys, or do we need to just let go of all of our Minnesota Wild forwards and maybe the goalie? We already talked about the goalie, but the forwards.
Yeah, definitely hang on to the goalie. Hang on to, again, you know what you tried to learn over the summer, and you know what you went into your draft thinking. Five games, you were basing your decisions, I hope, on 80-game samples, at least. Don't let five-game samples change your mind. But I understand the temptation, especially for these Minnesota Wild forwards who have just combined to do a terrible job of scoring goals. Minnesota has scored just 6 goals over their first 3 games. Elon, I feel like that needs an update because they've played more than 3 games, so maybe you can help provide it at some point. Everybody stinks on Minnesota is essentially the moral after the first run of the season. Bruce Boudreau said in a post-game quote that the Wild aren't going to win by scoring like a whole lot of goals, and it's not like this is a change in philosophy either. The Wild were a bottom 5 team in 5-on-5 goals scored last season, but there was still offensive relevance to be found amongst the forwards and defensemen in their lineup. This year, not yet. I don't at all love also that Parise and Staal are both supposed to be everything for the lines they're playing on. You've got Parise playing with Luke Kunin and Joel Eriksson Ek. You've got Eric Staal playing with Jordan Greenway and Kevin Fiala. Just put Parise and Staal together. Call it a day. Let's not make things too complicated. And then, of course, you've got the line that actually has 3 solid players on it. Jason Zucker, Matt Zuccarello, and Mikko Koivu, who, you know, are doing okay. Zucker's got a couple goals. Good for him. But I think Parise and Staal should probably not be spread out across 2 lines if those 3 are all on one line. The Wild aren't deep enough to do it. Just to zero in a little bit, zoom in on what Parise, Staal, and Zuccarello have been doing so far this year. Parise's down 60 seconds of 5-on-5 ice time. His shot rate stats are down a lot, actually. They're down like 75%. Fewer than 3 shots per 60 minutes. That's not per game. That's per 60 minutes played. And this is a guy who's a big shooter, right? He usually gets 9 or 10 shots per 60 minutes at 5-on-5. So something's wrong there. And then you look at Eric Staal and you see he's also down. He's down 2 minutes of 5-on-5 ice time. Similar declines in his shot rates. And it's so weird because Staal and Parise, these guys are their lines and they're not the ones getting shots off. And then you look at Matt Zuccarello, who's really experiencing the same thing as the other 2 in Staal and Parise. Fewer minutes, fewer shots being directed on net. 4 of Minnesota's top 8 shot getters, by the way, are defensemen, including their top 2, who are tied for first. Jared Spurgeon and Ryan Suter lead the Wild in shots on goal. And then it's Kunin, Marcus Foligno, Ryan Hartman, Mikko Koivu leading the way for forwards. It's a supremely weird start for the Wild offense, which means that I'm not going to rush to drop them because it's too weird to keep going. I am feeling a little less worse about my losing out on adding Eric Staal in the Cupful. I bid big on him. I was outbid bigger and I haven't missed anything. So I feel fine about that. But I think I still believe, especially that Parisi can get going. Staal, I think I can get going too. But if you own him in a league, take a look at who your other centers are, because if his value over replacement isn't that great, you might want to swap him out, at least just for the short term, if you're able to stream him out and still have the chance to bring him back in.
Yeah, okay. So, Brian, I'm going to have to disagree here, because you're saying, you know, oh, you want to look at the 82-game sample from last year as opposed to the four or five-game sample this year. The thing is, there's a reason why Dom Lucician, you know, regresses players that are older when he comes up with his models and his projections, right? Like, these players are all in their 30s at this point.
I'm not saying forget that a player, like, is subject to the effects of chronological age.
Yeah, but Parisi, Staal, and Zuccarello, all in their 30s. Also, with Zuccarello...
So they're going to go from everything to nothing?
Well, I don't know. Obviously,
there's
not to nothing.
There's a curve, Elon. It's a gentle drop. Not what we're seeing here.
Okay. We'll have to wait and see. Zuccarello, I'm especially concerned about, because last year, don't forget, he got all those points. He was playing with Zibanejad, who I think we're starting to learn is pretty freaking amazing. And now he
is definitely not...
Well, you know what I mean. Like, he's having some... Let me talk, man. I'm trying to get excited about how fun the season has been for some of these people not on the Minnesota Wild. Zuccarello, I'm going to say you could drop him. Eric Staal, probably you could drop him too. Parise, I don't know. Give him another game, but I'm very concerned about all of these guys. But obviously, it depends who's available in your free agency list. These guys have all been getting dropped in my leagues. Brian, Eric Staal was just dropped in my Cupful division, Tier 1 Sweden. So we'll wait and see if there's a $17 bid, you know, tomorrow when he becomes available. I have a feeling that's not going to happen. Maybe I'll put down at zero if I can think of someone I think might be even worse than him that I could drop. But, you know, we could agree to disagree here. And it's probably going to be somewhere in the middle, right? Like, I'm not saying these guys are going to be awesome. You're probably not saying that either, but you're saying you think they could do better than this. But they're going to have to do a lot better, right? Like, we want 50, 60-point paces from these guys to be fantasy relevant, what we expected last year.
And four games in, it's not fair to judge. I mean, Eric Staal only had 52 points last season, and we detailed in our almanac a bunch of things that went wrong because he had 76 points the year before, 65 points the year before that. Yes, he's 35 years old now, but going from 76 to 52 to now I guess he's pacing for 20-something, that's not how it works, right? You've got to at least expect some measure of fantasy relevance from Jordan Staal, from Eric Staal. Jordan Staal, of course you can expect it from Elon. But I'm hoping that before long, Staal and Parisi are united and can finally do great things together.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely think of counterexamples to what you're saying, but that's how hockey is. Like, Jeff Carter, you know, was getting 60 points a season, and now all of a sudden he's complete garbage. And actually, let's get to that team, the LA Kings. Maybe we'll even get to Jeff Carter, but first, how about another terrible-looking goalie in Jonathan Quick? Yeesh! 14 goals against in his first two games that he's played versus Vancouver and Edmonton. Jack Campbell has also played two games. He hasn't been especially great in either, but still head and shoulders ahead of Quick with only 7 goals against and 2 wins. So I assume Quick is likely to play today versus Vegas since Campbell played yesterday. If Quick stinks again, I'm asking this like sort of question about predicting the future because people listening to this will already know whether or not Quick stunk because they're listening to this on Monday. But if he stinks again, can people consider finally dropping him if they haven't already, and maybe consider adding Jack Campbell? Like, I've been sort of searching on Twitter, looking at the vibe. Don't worry, Brian, I've been trying to only pay attention to the verified tweets. I know you get mad at me if I don't pay if I'm paying attention to, you know, the nobodies on Twitter. But the vibe is that a lot of people are saying that they think Campbell, like, basically if the Kings want to have a chance to have a good season and challenge for a playoff spot, they need to like switch to Jack Campbell ASAP. There doesn't seem to be much faith in Jonathan Quick at this point. I even saw Kat Silverman tweet saying that she thinks that Jonathan Quick should be sent down to the minors to let him tune up his game, maybe call up Cal Peterson, who's doing a really great job right now. So I don't know, I'm really losing faith in Jonathan Quick quickly. It's time to, I think, drop him. And also, I'm kind of interested in Jack Campbell because this Kings team, we'll talk about the forwards in a second, this team is scoring a lot of goals, so they just need a decent goalie, and maybe you could have something here.
Yeah, maybe in Jack Campbell, you're saying, but not Jonathan Quick. I still have some faith in Jonathan Quick, who has been awful, right? A 756 save percentage at 5-on-5, where generally your save percentage is better than like your all-around number, right? If a goalie has a 9-10 save percentage, sometimes they might have a 9-35-on-5 save percentage because most of the damage happens on the penalty kill. But Jonathan Quick, and the number that should be the best, is a 7 56, which is terrible. And if you're trying to compare him to like Dubnyk or Jones, he's more a Dubnyk in that his team isn't doing much worse for him, but he is doing much worse for them. And I can't imagine that Jonathan Quick has a ton of rope. Thank goodness for his contract is all I can say, because I think that does keep him tied to the NHL team. I think there's no way they send him down. The Kings suck, like, period. I know you're going to say they're scoring a lot of goals, but they're not a good team, and I don't think they're about to make him their scapegoat. They have nothing to gain from that. I wonder if they can try and teach him some lessons in practice or during games. Like, don't send him to the AHL. I don't like that idea. Maybe because I own him in one league. Accidentally. Was it on the Patreon cast? I missed the button, and he was at the top of my queue for no good reason.
And
okay. So you want me to talk about Jack Campbell? I can see him eating away at Jonathan Quick's starts, but he's going to have to play better before Jonathan Quick has a chance to rediscover whatever game he does have left. I own Quick. Campbell's available. I'm not dropping Quick outright for Campbell. If anything, I'm actually just dropping Quick outright, period. I'm not going to add another Kings goalie to extend my crease misery. Jack Campbell might be good, but the Kings are not, and I don't want to have their goalie.
Okay, well, sure, maybe if you're deciding between Quick and Campbell, the answer could be neither. But again, another potential goalie that if you're holding on to a Jones or a Dubnyk or a Quick, if someone like Jack Campbell's in free agency, you might start considering to yourself, huh, there's someone who might end up being good. But obviously, you're saying you don't believe in it yet. We'll have to see. Like, Jack Campbell had a really good run last year, so there might be something here. This might be like a, you know, Darcy Kemper in waiting, where you never expected anything from him for a long time, and all of a sudden, he's turning into a really good player. But yeah, we'll have to see more data. As far as you saying that you don't think they'll send Quick down, because what do they have to gain? I think what they have to gain is, like, trying to actually be a good team and win. You know, like, that's the goal of an NHL franchise, is to win games, try to get into the playoffs. Not all, yeah, unless they're tanking. But Cal Peterson's been good. And what does it matter what his contract is? Send him to the minors. No one's going to... If someone claims him on waivers, it's the best thing that could ever happen to the LA Kings. It's not going to happen. So they can do whatever they want. Don't tell them what they can't do. But you're probably right. But hey, this is Kat Silverman. I'm not just quoting a nobody. She was on our show just a couple weeks ago. I think she knows a little bit about goalies. I'll link the tweet in the show notes so the patrons can see it.
I'm not challenging her credibility, Elon.
I know. I didn't say you were. I'm just saying that it was a thought that she brought up. Okay. Like I said, the crazy thing about the Kings so far, they're actually scoring a lot of goals after their 7-4 win over the Preds yesterday. They've got 18 goals in four games. Andre Kopitar up to 2 goals and 5 assists in 4 games. Drew Doughty, 3 goals and 2 assists. Dustin Brown, 2 goals and 3 assists. So the guys who are probably already owned in your league are doing well. The people who waited in their drafts and snapped up Kopitar and Doughty feeling very good about themselves. And of the players that could potentially be available in your free agent list, we've got Tyler Toffoli with 2 goals and 2 assists so far. Ilya Kovalchuk has 2 goals and 3 assists. Kind of everyone's getting in on the fun aside from Jeff Carter and his sad only 1 assist when the Kings are scoring all of these goals. So Brian, do you think the Kings can keep up the scoring to some extent? And would you be looking at Toffoli or new coach, new Kovey as potential FA ads?
You may not be shocked to hear, Elon, that the Kings, with all this scoring, rank 3rd in the league in 5-on-5 shooting percentage, but you may be shocked to hear that they rank 2nd in expected goals 4 per 60 minutes at 5-on-5. Like that little switcheroo there? They're right behind Carolina in expected goals rates, and they're ahead of Philadelphia, Vegas, and Toronto. Is this what happens when you give up 21 goals in 4 games, that every game suddenly turns into a track meet and you can just keep scoring because it's wide open and nobody cares about defense anymore? That's the best case you may be able to make for the Kings to continue scoring goals. I am not totally convinced that they've got the personnel to keep up this way, but it's nice to see while it lasts. And we know that Kopitar, Doughty, Dustin Brown were all available in your drafts this year for great value, and they're providing great early returns for their owners. As for Kovalchuk specifically, he's playing at even strength with Trevor Lewis and Michael Amadio, so good for him for putting up whatever production he has, but it's really not the best place for him to be producing. And Toffoli also makes, you know, an okay stream as per usual. He's doing his 3 shots per game thing, which is lovely. You know, as long as the Kings are scoring goals, go ahead and grab them. I just don't see this lasting. I don't see them being one of the league leaders in goals scored when all is said and done.
Okay, yeah, so wait and see. But if you like their schedule in an upcoming week, maybe take a shot on Kovalchuk. Brian, you say, like, oh, you don't like him playing with Trevor Lewis and Michael Amadio. How about saying, I love how Trevor Lewis and Michael Amadio get to play with all-star Ilya Kovalchuk. Maybe it's a little late for that, but I like what I'm seeing from him. He did start last year hot, too, before, you know, he got a little bit buried by the coach. So I'd be curious to see what Kovalchuk can do. But Brian, if you want to go see guys like Kovalchuk and Kopitar, you're kind of running out of time. They're getting to the twilight of their career. So you might want to, if you're in the California area, go check out a Kings game, and if you want to get tickets to that game, why not use our friends over at SeatGeek? Because Brian, if you use something else, you know what it's like. Like, it's almost like these ticketing websites, they're making it difficult on purpose to get tickets to your sporting events and concerts that you want to go to. It's always like they don't care about the customer experience. There's weird fees showing up at inopportune times. Like, I don't even, like, these sites, I hate them, but I really do like SeatGeek because it's a site that makes it easy for all of the people who are using it. They've got millions of live event tickets, a price match guarantee. You could, like, use the app. You could sort all the events in your city by value, which is, I think, a really good feature. Also, the price that they show you is actually the final price, which I really appreciate. You could take a quick look at the app store. You've got over 50,000 five-star reviews. How's that for customer satisfaction? So, like, also, like, anyways, I could just tell you forever how great SeatGeek is. It's the site that I use when I want to buy tickets to things. I'm taking a look in LA right now at if I was in the area. We have a former podcast guest, John Reed. He lives there. So, John, if you want to check out some events in LA, there's some good ones coming up. Brian, why don't you try to guess which one is the most expensive? You could go see the Flames at the Kings next weekend, so that would be fun. You could go for a little drive and go see the Hurricanes at the Ducks, or which one should I say here? I'll do a concert, or the Jonas Brothers. So which one is going to be the most expensive between those three tickets?
Jonas Brothers.
Oh, damn. That was an easy guess for you, and you're right. Yeah. So you got to drop $56 to go see the Jonas Brothers, but we're talking $17 for Flames at Kings and $21 for Hurricanes at Ducks. So some good ticket prices on SeatGeek if you want to see some NHL action. Want to take a guess, Brian? Lizzo is also going to be there next weekend. What do you think? Plus or minus $200?
Minus?
No, plus.
Well, you're asking me, so it's plus, obviously.
Well, it could have been $199, but yeah, Lizzo is hot right now, so maybe you want to go see her, and you can get your ticket over at SeatGeek, and if $204 for Lizzo seems like a lot, how about $194? Brian, tell our listeners how they can get that price.
Yeah, you can save 5% off that Lizzo ticket, or just $10 off your very first SeatGeek purchase. All you need to do is use our promo code, download the SeatGeek app today, and use the promo code KEEPING for $10 off on your first purchase. That's like half the price of one of those Kings or Ducks tickets. That's promo code KEEPING for $10 off on your first purchase. SeatGeek!
SeatGeek! Thank you for sponsoring us, SeatGeek. Okay, so let's go to our next disappointing player. So that's our excitement. Now we'll go back to being bummed out. We talked about Jamie Benn last week, and you were optimistic that he would be able to bounce back. Hey, he has 2 points in his last three games, so that's a nice start. But now I got another Dallas star I want to ask you about. How about Joe Pavelski and his sad one assist in 6 games played? He's been playing with Hintz on the second line lately. Hintz is doing great, but he's not helping Pavelski out so far. It's supposed to be the other way around, based on their contracts. John Klingberg hasn't been doing anything on Dallas. He only has 1 assist in 6 games so far. So, like, what is happening in Dallas? All of these star players, no pun intended, that were drafted super high, kind of disappointing.
Very disappointing for the Dallas Stars as we watch them really stumble out of the gate. They're kind of a mess, aren't they? There are team-wide issues happening, right? They're 1-4-1. They're 1 out of 20 on the power play, making tons of mistakes left and right. And then you have Joe Pavelski there in the middle of it, trying to acclimatize to a new role on a new team. And that's probably pretty hard to do under the circumstances. Pavelski is down about a minute of ice time in Dallas, and he's not getting as involved in the offense as he has been in the past as a Shark. It's too early, though, to say that this isn't going to work for Pavelski in Dallas. Let's see the Stars as a team right themselves first. Did you ask me about his contract? I don't think anyone actually cares, but his contract is probably fine. $7 million for the next 3 years isn't such a huge bet to be making. So if you're in a cap league, I guess that's okay. But yeah, like, let's not write him or any of the Dallas Stars off yet. Don't forget, Corey Perry scheduled to be back perhaps this Saturday.
Oh, wow. Woo, everything's going to change now. And then he'll be injured by next Sunday. So get him for that one game that you can. So John Klingberg also, I assume you're going to say not to worry about him. He's one of the guys who gets drafted in the top 10 of defensemen. People must be really tearing their hair out right now.
Klingberg is some cross between the victim and suspect of Dallas's stumble out of the gate offensively, particularly on that power play that's gone 1 out of 20. And by that I mean Klingberg, you know, can't succeed when the team around him isn't succeeding, but to a really large extent, he is a big piece of that team's success. So he needs to step up his game too. Dallas is shooting less than 5% with him on the ice thus far though. So that's going to change. Klingberg is going to get points. But yeah, it's maddening to be having this conversation and having all this talent in Dallas, Kling, Ben, Sagan, Radulov, Pavelski, and see the team ranked 28th in goals for per game played. They've been anemic so far. They rank 29th in expected goals at 5-on-5, and the Stars need to turn this thing around, but it doesn't look like anyone knows how. I was reading a Sean Shapiro article over at The Athletic, and the coach, what's his name, Jim Montgomery, he sounded a lot like Peter Laviolette did, talking about the Nashville power play at the end of last season. Montgomery's like, we tried this. We tried that. We're doing this. We tell our players this. And like just going through a list, and it's like, man, none of this is working. Figure it out.
Yeah, and I mean, you were saying these numbers about how they're 29th in goals and this and expected goals. They'd be like 31st if it wasn't for Roope Hintz and his 4 goals in 6 games. He's the only one doing well. So yeah, you'd got to think they'll be able to figure it out with all this talent. I'd be holding on to Pavelski and Klingberg. So it looks like we haven't really had any people that you've said to drop yet. I said those Minnesota guys and Jonathan Quick. You're still saying to be patient, but I definitely agree with you on the Dallas Stars. Okay, let's go to New Jersey, Brian, and let's stick with some more troubling defensemen, starting with PK Subban on the 0-5 New Jersey Devils. The Devils took another tough loss yesterday, 3-0. They got blanked by Tuukka Rask and the Bruins and are definitely not looking like the up-and-coming team we were expecting going into the season. And while I could talk about guys like Hall, Gusev, Hischier, like these guys are not producing like we expected so far, but at least they have a couple of points. People are starting to get worried about Gusev because of his weird line placement. But the one guy that's really jumping out to me is PK Subban. Only a sad 1 assist, which he picked up in the first game versus the Jets, and nothing since. And the big thing that worries me about Subban is that this is nothing new, right? Like, this guy struggled last year to only 31 points in 63 games with the Predators. And I know we explained it away, like Brian, you explained it all away in the Almanac and how you think that he, you know, deserved better and how you think like getting this fresh start in New Jersey was going to mean that he was going to totally bounce back to his numbers that he had in Montreal. So far, not even coming close to what he did last year. Obviously, it's a very small sample size, but is it possible that maybe that 40-point pace that PK Subban put up last year, maybe that's like his upside at this point and, you know, not the floor that we were expecting him to be able to jump off from now that he's on the Devils? Like, are you worried about that at all? Like, maybe he's just not as good as he used to be.
40 points is still his floor, and I don't think it's his upside. Elon, you're skipping the headline here, which is the New Jersey Devils have combined for 9 goals in 5 games. And if the Devils have only scored 9 goals, how many points should we reasonably expect Subban to have picked up on those? 3 points? 4 points? And on the power play, the Devils are 0 for 15, which is where we really expected to see Subban's production get a jump start. So you can already hear me asking for calm, Elon, when we talk about Subban's start to the year. I know you feel like giving up on him, and you sort of voiced this on the Almanac.
No, not true.
Yeah, you did, because he's not been great in Nashville, and he's getting older, and you're just like, does he have that extra gear? Like, this question for you isn't so new. Like, I know you were excited about him going to New Jersey and agreed that it was better than Nashville, but I think when I put up my, like, 60-ish point thought on him, you were like, no, what? Like, that's, we don't know. We don't know that he can still do that. And I would love to see him get the opportunity to do it in New Jersey. So the question is he getting that opportunity so far? And the answer is yes. In a way, his role on the power play as a Devil is there so far. He's averaging 3 minutes and 42 seconds per night with the man advantage, which is somewhere between his Nashville deployment and his Montreal deployment, which is a good start. But the curious part of it is that Subban is not shooting the puck at all the way he did in Montreal. Just 1 lone power play shot so far in his first 5 games with New Jersey. In that time, Taylor Hall has taken 7. Then Nikita Gusev has taken 4. Simmons and Palmieri have taken 3. So I don't know that he's going to get to be this bombs away power play quarterback that he got to be in Montreal. Keep in mind, when he was in Montreal, you had Pacioretty. And that's about it for other players who you want shooting on your power play. Subban often doubled the number of shots that other forwards on that top unit had in Montreal, and for good reason, because there was no Taylor Hall in the picture there. So we're going to see if PK Subban not taking a lot of shots on the power play is by design or just an early quirk, or maybe it is by design and it's something that's going to be adjusted because it's not working right now. Right? Like, the best hope Subban owners have is that the Devils continue to fail on their next three or four power plays and say, okay, it's time to change things up. PK, you fire away from the point. Another thing about Subban as a Devil moving back to 5-on-5 is that he has this super low pace. And when I say pace, I'm not talking points. Pace is a word we can use to describe just how many shot attempts are happening while Subban is on the ice. And there aren't many for, and there aren't many against. They're like both in the mid-40s, where you would expect numbers around 55-60 shot attempts per 60 minutes, either for and or against. So it's kind of weird that the pace is so low. And I don't know if this is by design or just an early season quirk for the Devils. But it's another reason to think that what we're seeing from Subban early this year isn't what we're going to see from him the rest of the way. And that's why I'm going to be poking around to see if I can reasonably buy low on PK Subban, because we haven't seen much out of the Devils' offense yet. But I'm confident that once we do, Subban is going to be a part of it.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it's funny that you said, like, the best thing that could happen to him is that the power play is terrible and they change it up. But, like, another way that goes is that he just gets bumped from that power play and they get Will Butcher back
on
there.
No way.
I mean, okay, I just think, like, again, you're, like, now mischaracterizing me as saying, like, I'm, like, super down on PK Subban. I'm just not as super high on him as people, you know, talking about 60-plus points. Maybe we are just looking at, like, a 45-point defenseman, which isn't that bad, and I know we all love PK Subban. He's such a great guy. But, you know, these Montreal years that you keep talking about, it's already, like, 5 years ago almost. Like, this is a long time ago. This guy's in his 30s. He's had some injury issues. Like, I'm sorry, Brian, like, with these Minnesota players, like, at some point, these players slow down, and I'm not going to be expecting 60-point PK Subban until I start seeing some glimpses. And if you're gonna try to buy low on him, like, I think it's good advice. Obviously, he's not this bad, and even like a 45, maybe 50 point defenseman is valuable. But like, to our listeners, like, I wouldn't want to spend too much on someone that it's been a couple years now since he's been, you know, fantasy relevant to a significant extent.
I hear you, and I don't think we'll ever see Montreal PK in full again. Like, that was the peak of his career and he was getting incredible deployment and the whole system worked around him. But I'm already happy that, you know, you started by asking me, is his upside what we thought his floor was at 40? And then you snuck up to 45 and then you just said 45, 50. Yes, he's in his 30s, but so are we, Elon, and we're not slowing down. Like, we're okay. I think we're doing okay. You mentioned Jeff Carter, by the way. You were mentioning those Minnesota players and how aging curves happen. Like, Jeff Carter went from 66 points, and then he was almost a point per game, 22 points in 27 games as a 33-year-old before he got injured and missed the rest of the season. Then he had 33 points in 76 games last year, which is too big a drop. Like, there were contextual factors to be considering coming back from an injury, a garbage coach and team situation. Like, when we're talking about aging curves, we don't say 60 points and then 40 points, right? You see a drop. Generally, you see a steady decline. Players like Corey Perry or Danny Heatley are the exception just because of their playing style. Like, when you have these shooters and Bobby Ryan who can't totally skate all that well, but they're really great, you know, when they can get to an open space and fire it off, that's perfect. But that ability goes really quickly when shooting, like having that quick shot is their one dimension. But you're generally seeing, in the case of Eric Staal, 60 points, 55, 50, 45. Like, it's much more gradual than you're letting on. That's my example of an aging curve that I think it helps to clarify.
I mean, that's fair, but I also think there are a lot of exceptions, and some of these players might be exceptions. Like, the league is also changing. It's younger. It's faster. Like, it might not be the same as, you know, back when you got into the podcasting game 5-6 years ago. So we'll adapt. We'll see.
You're saying that I've stopped looking at research and data and statistics in the 5-6 years since we've started the podcast?
Nah, I'm just making jokes. I don't know. You're probably right. What do you want me to say? Like, Subban, I don't think he's a 60-point guy. Let's just wait and see. We'll swing back to him and those other Devils like Gusev and, you know, even Taylor Hall at some point, you know, in a few weeks if the Devils are still struggling. And we'll see, like, if we need to adjust our expectations.
We also spend considerable time in our almanac marveling at these 30-year-old players. In fact, you were the one making the argument that players can stay good for longer because of, like, better conditioning and training. And we were talking about all these guys, like, I mean, they were super elite, like Crosby and Giroux, who saw more minutes and fantastic production, like better than they had in recent years. I mean, Staal and Jeff Carter and PK Subban aren't necessarily the same tier of elite, but they're still better than most NHL players, or they were at one point in their career. I think we can afford them some slack.
Okay, so we'll give them some slack, but at the same time, we got to try to win our fantasy leagues this year, so I'm bringing it up, and I also don't think you could just group everyone together. Every player is a unique situation. PK Subban, I brought up an injury concern. You know, there's other things to consider. Eric Staal, you know, whatever. I don't want to talk about these guys. We got to get through all these disappointing players, because I want to be exciting at the end of the show and get people, you know, excited about some players that they might be able to add from free agency if they decide they want to drop some of these guys, but the sad train still must go on for a little longer, Brian. Like with Subban, I'm not loving what I'm seeing from Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who we thought maybe could get a bump from Phil Kessel joining the fold. Like, he's been a 40 to 45 point guy forever, and we said in the almanac, well, now that Kessel's there on the power play, this should be great. But nope, so far, through four games, OEL has one assist to show for himself, which he picked up on a Grabner goal in the 3-2 overtime loss to Colorado yesterday. This Coyotes team is not looking like they've improved their scoring prowess at all, and Oliver Ekman-Larsson is not inspiring the least bit of confidence that he could even match his 44 points from last season. And of course, Ekman-Larsson, he isn't alone. Like Phil Kessel, the one who we thought was going to be the savior, only one assist in four games. Derek Stepan, just one goal. Clayton Keller, he has three assists, which is nice. But Brian, like, do you foresee us getting to a point where we may have to suggest that it's not worth owning any Coyotes in fantasy aside from the goalies? And if yes, like, how far away are we from that moment if these guys continue on the paces that they're currently on?
I don't know we're going to get to that point. We know Arizona is not a terribly offensive team, and so we definitely need to check assumptions at the door that anyone is going to stand out in a really marvelous way. We certainly pointed out that 32-year-old Kessel coming to the team isn't going to fix things on his own, and of course Nick Schmaltz is not getting the deployment you'd hoped for going into the season. All that said, 7 goals in 4 games for the Coyotes probably is not going to be the norm in the desert. They're shooting just over 5%, and that includes on the power play, where they're 0 for 9 to begin the year. And I'm saying they're shooting just over 5%. That's bad, okay? Around 9% is a lovely place to find your team shooting. Even if you're not shooting that well, about 7.5% is reasonable. So the Coyotes should be doing better. And those are 5-on-5 numbers too. So lift them a little bit to account for the power play. And you'll see the Coyotes are behind, but in an unsustainable way. They're going to do better. I think it's kind of a sneaky buy low time for Arizona, though. I will voice my continued concern that the Coyotes might choose to remain very much defense first in their approach, which is going to limit the offensive upside of anyone who plays for them, regardless of how good they are on their own. Like if you're Clayton Keller or if you're Phil Kessel. But Arizona's shot rates and expected goals are like mid-pack-ish healthy, and they have that low shooting percentage. So I'm not at all ready to say that 7 goals in 4 games is who the Coyotes are. There are goals being left on the table early on that are going to come eventually. When they do, you can enjoy your Keller and Kessel. Then the rest is kind of a crapshoot, but Ekman-Larsson and Stepan should at least be reasonably relevant. Ekman-Larsson more so than Stepan, but there's still reason to hold Coyotes skaters.
Yeah, for now. I don't know. We'll have to touch base again.
I know you want to drop all these guys. And like, the answer here, like, for the Minnesota players and the Coyotes, it all depends on who's available in free agency, right? In shallower leagues, yeah, drop Ekman-Larsson, drop Phil Kessel, drop Eric Staal especially. Like, he's definitely the lowest on the low end of all the players we've talked about so far today that you might want to drop. It's all relative, but you could be considering these guys to be at the low end of your roster. Like, if you're someone who dropped Paul Stastny early on in the season, dropping these guys makes some measure of sense too. But I think they're in better shape still than Stastny was when we all dropped him.
Well, yeah, the thing with Stastny, we'll get to him in a bit when we're talking about the happy players. He was getting dropped because he was playing on the third line. Now he's back on the second line. So now you feel like a dummy if you dropped him and now he's going to probably play with Mark Stone for the rest of the season, and someone else is going to enjoy that production after you drafted him. We'll get to that with these Coyotes guys. Like, Stepan and Keller and Kessel are getting top deployment and still doing nothing. So I feel like it's a different situation. And yeah, we could wait a little longer. You're saying maybe they're due for a few more goals. I sure hope so, because Phil Kessel, you know, we talked all summer about how, like, he was a big part of that Pittsburgh power play, but like, Pittsburgh seems to be doing okay, and Phil Kessel so far nothing. So hopefully he can start to spark that Arizona power play, make Oliver Ekman-Larsson worth holding, as well as Kessel himself. And then, Brian, I did mention that the Coyotes that you for sure want to hold are their goalies. Antti Raanta finally played yesterday, his first game of the year. He was solid, stopping 29 of 32. And actually, you know, Brian, how I don't like counting overtime goals against when judging how well a goalie played. Like, overall, you see, oh, he let in 3 goals on 32 shots. That's, like, fine. But he actually did a lot better. It's just that third goal that he let in was in overtime, which is a much harder shot to stop. So Raanta, trust me, he played well if you were watching the game. Darcy Kuemper sporting a sparkling 957 save percentage through the 3 games that he's played. Where are we standing with this goalie situation now? Ranta's back, but at this point, I feel like I just want to assume it's going to be a 50-50 split with great save percentage in low-scoring games. Like, are you still of the mind that Raanta has the job? It's his job to either hold or win pretty easily? Or do you think at this point, like, Kuemper has proven that he's really good and it's probably just going to be 50-50 and they'll go one then the other without either of them jumping up in games played?
No, I'm with you that it looks to me like it's going to be a 50-50 split. Darcy Kuemper has come out very strong with a 957 save percentage over his first 3 games played. So way to go, Darcy Kuemper, really proving that he can at least handle the timeshare. You know, we had Kat Silverman on during our auction draft episode, and she had a lot of really lovely things to say about the way he's progressed in his career, which, you know, throws into doubt my standing theory, or at least it was my standing theory for a while, that goalies don't improve. What you see is what you get. But, like, it sounded silly always, but I didn't have a whole lot of counterexamples, and Darcy Kuemper is proving to be one that might make me reconsider. You know, he trained in a different way, he got a new coach, new support system. Great. Good for Darcy Kuemper, and I think he has pushed Antti Raanta out of being a surefire number one and into a 1A, 1B split, and the 1A might even be Darcy Kuemper.
Yeah, and plus, Antti Raanta, very injury-prone, as we've seen, so hopefully his injury troubles are behind him, but if somehow Kuemper is available to you, which I doubt he is, but right, like, the minute Raanta goes down, you definitely want to jump on Kuemper, but either way, you probably just want to have both of these guys. They're probably going to give you good save percentages and goals against averages when they play, because they're such a low-scoring team, but they play very low-scoring games. Brian, another defenseman who, again, wasn't great last year, but you thought, oh, he'll be fine. It didn't happen. Just like PK Subban, we got to talk about Shane Gostisbehere. Only 3 games so far for Philly, so they've played, like, the fewest games of all the teams, but no points for Gostisbehere. Still seeing less than that 20 minutes per game that I was concerned about at the end of last season. It's new coach, same ghost, as opposed to new coach, new Covey. We're also talking, like, 1 shot per game so far for Gostisbehere, and either, like, a hit or a block in each of those games. So, like, no peripherals, low minutes, no points. He's still on that top power play, but, man, like, this is a tough guy to have reached for in a draft, expecting a bounce back, and then watching this so far, like, again, only 37 points in 78 games last season. Brian, is this, like, Subban territory, where you're just going to tell me that, Elon, get your head out of your butt, like, this guy's great, and you don't need to give up on him after only 3 games, or do you see reasons for concern?
I'm not as sure about Gostisbehere as I am about Subban, but let's take a look at another Philadelphia Flyer who has struggled out of the gate. He has just 1 assist in 3 games. He's down 3 minutes of ice time, and his name is Claude Giroux, okay? So let's just take it easy when we're talking about the Flyers. I guess it is kind of facetious of me to bring it up that way, because Gostisbehere is not looking as good as Giroux is elsewhere in his numbers. Gostisbehere is showing essentially 0 signs that would point to the bounce back we're hoping for. But we do need to remember that Philadelphia had this super weird start to the season in their schedule. Like, not the way they're playing, although the way they're playing is a little weird, but their schedule. They've only played 3 times. They opened the season in Prague, then they flew home for 1 game, and then they flew to Vancouver? The NHL's had them travel a ton to begin the year, and I feel like that's a piece of this time on ice puzzle with Giroux and Gostisbehere. And Jacob Voracek also down to 15.5 minutes per game, a 3-minute drop since last year, which is not going to sustain. I feel like this is all just about managing health and wellness amongst players through this really strange schedule quirk to begin the year. It is a fine sign that Gostisbehere is still seeing the majority of his team's power play time, though it's not quite as much as it's been in past years. I don't know. You know, it's been such a wonky start to the season. I think we need to give Philadelphia another week before trying to figure out if they're meeting or blowing our expectations. Gostisbehere early returns are not great, though. And if I did have him and there were some interesting defensemen available in free agency, I might consider letting him go just until he shows something, because I don't think anyone else is going to race to grab him after what he did essentially all of last season. There's the risk he's going to do it all over again this season.
Yeah. But not the same with PK Subban. But that's because Subban is in a new situation. Gostas Behar, same situation, and he didn't produce last year. That's why I wouldn't also compare him to Claude Giroux. Sure, Claude Giroux's struggling a little bit out of the gate, but he gave us like 100 points last year or so. Yeah. I think that we could probably give him a pass for now. Though there is another defenseman on the team who's doing fantastically. Ivan Provorov has 3 points, two of them from the second power play, which means he's kind of good on the power play. So that could also be someone that could challenge Gostas Behar for that top power play time if he continues to struggle. And like you said, though, it's very early. We've got like Voracek and JVR. Both of them are pointless in 3 games so far. I won't bug you about them yet, but definitely guys will need to address soon if they're still pointless come next week's show or a couple weeks from now once we've got a decent sample of games. On the positive side, along with Provorov, how about Travis Konecny? 3 goals, 2 assists in 3 games now. He's actually been a big beneficiary of what we talked about last week of Sean Couturier getting bumped to the second line and second power play. Now Travis Konecny gets to play with Sean Couturier full time along with Oscar Lindblom at even strength on the power play. Is Konecny for real? Like, if he's still available, do people need to add this guy before it's too late? Like, a great start. He had a great pedigree coming into the league. He had stretches of being good over the past couple of seasons. Maybe this is the year he finally puts it all together, and this is your last chance to get him.
We liked Konecny in our almanac. We put him in the mid-50s, but so far he's already showing to be maybe a little bit better. And, you know, it is a little hypocritical of me to want to reserve judgment on players like Gostas Behar and say, let's wait and see when they're not doing what I think they do. And then for players like Konecny, be like, oh, yeah, these 3 games definitely show that he can be counted on. I do think, though, that this is the real thing from Travis Konecny, kind of. You know, he's scored 3 times on 7 shots. He's assisted on every power play goal scored while he's been on the ice. None of those things will sustain. But as we said before, I think Konecny's a legit player. And he's been one of those guys in Philadelphia who's been asked to play more minutes while we see the minute counts of Giroux and Voracek tumble a little bit early in the season, which, again, I think is just a travel issue. But something to keep a close eye on. I'm happy to see Konecny succeed in any case, and I think a 55-point pace should come to him this year. With upside to even hit 60, I love that he's playing with Couturier, but he's still in a good spot, even if he does end up landing with Kevin Hayes and like Jacob Voracek on the other side.
Yeah, you'd expect good line mates for sure, unless he falls into the bottom six, which has happened, but not looking like it's going to happen this year. Brian, also, I think we may have gotten Carter Hart's goalie tier wrong when we were doing our Schmore goalies, but we had them in tier 4. So far, Carter Hart's looking great. Philly, you know, even with all this travel issue, they won their first 2 games. Like, they're looking good. They lost in, I guess, was a shootout yesterday to Vancouver. So I would want to move him up. I know I didn't prep you in advance to talk about Carter Hart, but I just wanted to throw his name out there. He's looking like a really solid starting goalie in the league. No concern about Brian Elliott. He's the for sure starter. Philly's looking good. I really like this guy. I would have him in at least tier 3. And have you changed your mind at all about Carter Hart yet? Are you still thinking that he's like someone that you can't really depend on fully?
I'm waiting to see. I'm not going to change my mind after 3 games, but the early returns, like you said, are good. I'd love to see that he can handle a number one workload this year and put up even a league average save percentage would be a win in my books.
Okay. Brian, you want to bet on whether he'll have above or below average save percentage? I'll even give you a couple extra percentage points.
I know better than to bet on goalies.
Okay, well, you could choose to bet or not bet on goalies with our sponsor, our other sponsor for this episode, which are our friends over at MyBookie. I actually don't think you could bet on what Carter Hart's save percentage will be, but you can bet on a whole bunch of other things. Last week, we talked about how they have the NHL trophies that you could bet on, like who's going to win the Carter, who's going to win the Art Ross or the Hart, so that's a lot of fun. You could obviously also bet on just NHL games that are happening day in, day out. It's a lot of fun. You know, like, obviously, today's Sunday. This is a really exciting day in the fantasy hockey week, especially the end of the first matchup. If you're in a close matchup, you're going to be watching these games tonight super closely. Your blood is going to be just pumping throughout your body with excitement. But sometimes at the beginning of the week, you don't get that excitement, but you can with a, you know, you put a little scratch down on the game, makes it a little more fun. And if you're going to want to bet on a game, you definitely want to do it with our sponsor, MyBookie, because they're a reliable place where you can place your bets, know that they're going to have all the proper checks and balances in place to make sure you get paid out appropriately. Like, when you're betting, it's just as important to like bet on the right teams, but also to bet at the right place. And MyBookie is that place. Brian, we also have a special offer for our listeners. You can get a double deposit bonus. So if you see a thing you really like, you could put in like $20 and then bet $40 on that team and get the full payout. Even though you only spent $20, you get a double deposit bonus. All you have to do is use the promo code Keeping Carlson. Brian, I don't know. I'm looking tonight. There's three games. Penguins at the Jets, Flames at the Sharks, and Golden Knights at the Kings. I might just pick a winner for each of those games, make a little parlay where you bet a little and you can win a lot if you get all three right. That's a lot of fun. So check it out, mybookie.ag. And again, that's promo code KeepingCarlson. I know, Brian, I just kept saying your name a bunch of times, but I didn't actually throw to you. Any thoughts on any of these bets that I was referencing?
No, just a fun fact that in French, parlay means to speak.
There you go. And at mybookie.ag, parlay means to bet on multiple things at once, and then you win if you get them all right, and you get a multiplier of all of their odds. Okay. So now we're learning a lot of languages all around the world. Let's
mybookie.ag. Visit it today.
Yeah, offer code Keeping Carlson. So, okay, just a couple more disappointing players, and then we can get to the hot streaks, okay? But the Islanders, Matt Barzal and Anders Lee, both with only 2 points apiece through five games. Do you have any worries there? I feel like it's just very hard to imagine either of them being much better than their, you know, Barzal had around 60 points last year. Lee had around 50 points last year. I don't know, like Barzal, you know, in his first year, he had that point per game pace. He had Tavares on the first line. He centered the second line, but he was on the top power play with Tavares. And like, it's just not the case anymore. And I don't know, I'm starting to lose faith in Barzal being able to be anything more than a 60 point guy on this Islanders team, which isn't very offensively capable. Like, I think he's a good player, but I'm not excited about him in fantasy.
I think Barzal needs someone to set up, and that someone should be Anders Lee. Unfortunately, hasn't been clicking so far this year. In fact, Elon, what you've done a lot this episode is you've done a really fantastic job of naming the top players on teams that just aren't scoring goals yet. The Islanders are amongst that group. They have just 11 goals in five games, which is not very good. It will get better, maybe not miles better, but better enough that Barzal and Anders Lee still have a shot at our preseason almanac projections, which were 68 points for Barzal, 58 points for Lee. At least those were mine. I know you don't believe in Lee quite as much as I do, but it's too early to write these guys off when their team has yet to really find the back of the net.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not writing them off, but I think I'm going to go closer to 60 and 50 as opposed to you being closer to 70 and 60, a little bit below. So, yeah. Another quick one, then we'll move on to the hot streaks. Mike Green on Detroit. He's pointless in five games so far, and Detroit's been scoring a lot of goals. Mike Green, remember, he had a 50-point pace last season in the games he played before he got into all those injury troubles. He's seeing the least percentage of power play time in his career. He's only been on the ice for 36.2% of Red Wings' power play time this year, so he's entrenched on that second unit, which is a lot worse than the first unit. Like, does that pretty much explain it? Is there any hope here aside from, like, if for some reason Hronik and Chalowski see the top power play to Mike Green, can you just let him go? Is he done with being a fantasy relevant defenseman at this point?
I had a little bit of regret when I did not end up with Mike Green on any of my fantasy rosters. He was always available late in my drafts and even in free agency, and I just couldn't really pull the trigger, which is how I felt last year. And then I paid the price for it as he ended up being fantastic, and I ended up having to trade for him instead of just getting him for free. But this year, I feel like I'm not going to feel exactly so bad about not having Green on my roster. He's seeing almost 90 seconds more of ice at 5-on-5 each night, which is probably not what you expected me to say. That's great that he's seeing more 5-on-5 ice time. And with his 5-on-5 scoring, he could still be a fringe relevant fantasy player. Last year, he had 18 5-on-5 points in 43 games, which is a really good pace, right? That's almost 35 points or so at even strength. You pop on another 10 at least on the power play. That gets you to 45. But to really be worth owning, Mike Green does need that power play scoring, and that doesn't seem to be something that the Red Wings are keen on prioritizing early on. And if you think about it for a minute, why would they? Why not let Chalowski and Hronik get their reps in, build for the future? There's not a whole lot of sense in having Mike Green up there, really, in a year where the Red Wings are not expected to make the playoffs and are just trying to, you know, build and develop their team to make runs for future seasons. So while I wouldn't say Green is going to be awful all year, his upside is limited to 35, 40 points, maybe, if he's not a regular on the top power play.
Right, so then it's just up to you to decide if that's worthwhile in your league or not. He's been okay with peripherals. I guess that extra ice time is helping him get a few more like blocks and shots. But yeah, nothing going in so far. He's not going to be pointless forever. So if you decide to drop him, don't be surprised if then he gets an assist in the next game. You're like, oh, why did I drop him? But like, that's what's going to happen. He's not going to go pointless in 10 games, I don't think. Correct me if I'm wrong when it happens. All right, so Brian, let's end this sad section of the podcast. Put it in the back of your mind. If you have any of these players we've talked about, now you can start thinking about other players that might be available for you to add or, I don't know, trade for, though I guess you don't want to buy high on any of these guys on super hot streaks. But I'd love to get your thoughts on some of these players that are coming out of the gate super strong and whether you think they can keep it up. And I want to start right in Winnipeg with Patrick Laine, loving his new lot in life on the top line with Scheifele and Wheeler. Even with his pointless game yesterday, Laine's up to 3 goals and 7 assists in 6 games so far. You know, he said in the offseason there was that interview which then was apparently like misquoted or something, but he was disappointed that he didn't get to play on the top line. Looks like maybe that was part of the contract negotiation, who knows, but he's there, he's loving it, he's doing great. Brian, is this enough to get us back to thinking of Laine as the stud that we saw him as going into last season? Like, can we just throw away that weird end to the year last year where he wasn't getting points at all and just go back to saying this is a potential 50 goal 80 point score year in, year out, and if you have him in your league you gotta hold on for dear life?
That's what we all want to do. I'm getting there. I'm not there yet, but I'm getting there. A big piece of the reason why Laine is suddenly looking like himself again, he's got 2 more minutes of 5-on-5 ice time to work with and a world-class centerman. And it's a wonder what those two things can do for a goal scorer, right? They're, I think, really the driver here behind those early season points that Laine's putting up, along with a return to form and his shooting percentage is back up around 18%, which sounds high, and it is, but he's a guy who we expect to shoot, you know, like 16% isn't unreasonable, whereas last year he was stuck at 7% and 8% a lot of the time. The one thing that still concerns me about Laine is that his rate sets are actually worse than they'd been in the past couple years. So we've got to wait and see how things balance out. It could be a good time to explore selling high, but I honestly doubt you'll get a whole lot. There's probably more value in just keeping Laine, especially if you got him at a really reasonable price at your draft. I'm optimistic. I never thought he left, right? I think he had a really rough season last year. We couldn't really explain it away. I think he's still got big 40-goal scoring seasons ahead of him. It's just a matter of how soon he can get back on track. And playing with Scheifele and playing more often is a really great way to help get him started getting there.
Yeah, I definitely feel like playing on that top line is like a big part of the difference. Like, maybe he's not the best play driver, but if he is playing with Scheifele and Wheeler, he doesn't necessarily need to bring the puck into the zone and like whatever. He just needs to finish all of these great plays, and he's doing a great job at it. And I don't mean to diminish, like, he's a really great player and I'm excited about him, but there is always that risk. You never know, right? He could get bumped from the top line and all of a sudden he slows down. Though right now the Jets are looking good, so I'm sure they're not going to change anything now. Look at Connor Hellebuck and the D. They've really turned it around since last week when we were like, oh, this Jets team is looking terrible. But over the last 3 games, Connor Hellebuck's only let in 5 goals total, all wins. We overreacted a little bit. I was definitely saying, like, I'm very nervous about Connor Hellebuck. Also, Laurent Brossois was getting starts. This whole team was seeming to get caved in defensively. And, you know, you just look at the names that left over the offseason, I was really concerned. Last 3 games, looking good. But of course, this could just be the calm before the storm, and this might be people's best chance to sell high on Connor Hellebuck before it's too late, because I don't totally not still feel those concerns that I felt last week. Like, this has been a great week, but the Jets D still looks pretty thin. So yeah, I'm very curious to know what you think about Connor Hellebuck, and if you think that what we were thinking last week was the right thing, or if what we're seeing now is more of the right thing.
Well, my thoughts are pretty much unchanged from last week, that Winnipeg has a tall task ahead of them, and hopefully Hellebuck is up to the challenge. They don't actually seem to have improved a whole lot under the hood over the last couple games, so there's not a lot to say. Like, you know, this is not a redemption story about Winnipeg figuring things out on the back end and suddenly being okay there. That's not what happened, but the Jets are getting goals, and they are getting goaltending, both of which can certainly make things just look good on their own. So I'm not about to go around saying that the Jets are back the way they've been the last couple years. I don't think they're as good as they were the last couple seasons. That's not a hot take either. It's going to be more of a struggle for them to win games this year, but they're also not going to fall flat on their face. I trust that they have enough talent to figure things out, but it's not going to come easy or as easy as it did the last few years.
Yeah, I don't know. If it was me, I definitely feel like I agree with you. And I might be trying to see what I can get for Hellebuck. Like in a one-year league, I wonder if you could get like a Bobrovsky or Carey Price, who, you know, haven't been as great so far to start the year. I would definitely look to try to make a trade like that if you can. Obviously, don't sell too low because he should be a good goalie. And the Jets, like you said, score a lot of goals, but I am concerned about them defensively. And then, Brian, we already drooled a bunch last week over the Carolina Hurricanes. But like, I just feel like we have to talk about them again. Like, even though they lost to Columbus yesterday, I'm going to cut them some slack. It was the second half of a back-to-back, their first loss of the season. And there's like, we named a bunch of players doing well last week, and I feel like there's still players that we didn't highlight that we definitely need to, especially Dougie Hamilton, who is finally starting a season strong. Like, the story we always know with Hamilton is he starts slow, picks it up at the end of the year. Not this year. He's got 4 goals and 4 assists in 6 games. And by the way, that's with 3 power play points from the top power play. And that's right, you didn't mishear me. Dougie Hamilton and his power play unit with Dzingel, Haula, Svechnikov, and Tara Vinen, that definitely is the Carolina Hurricanes' top power play. They've seen the highest percentage of power play time in each of the last 4 games. I know you would think, no, the Sebastian Aho unit is the top power play. This is the second power play. No, it's not the case. Look at the time on ice. That tells you the story. So all of a sudden, we have Dougie Hamilton as a top power play defenseman, and he's killing it. And anyone who was able to get him a little late in your drafts, you're enjoying it now because he is looking like one of the top, like, elite defensemen in the league right now. You'll have to cool me down if you think I'm being too high on him. And of course, all of these players that I said that are on this power play with Hamilton are enjoying this development. Like Svechnikov, 8 points so far in 6 games, 3 power play points. So he's definitely taking off the way, you know, obviously we hoped he would do last year, but he was, what was he, 18? Like whatever. Now he's like a year older. This could be the big breakout for Svechnikov, and you'll be really happy if you drafted him, especially in a keeper league. Tara Vinen, 6 points on the year in 6 games. Dzingel, 5 points. Haula, 5 points. All goals, by the way, for Haula. A couple of them on the power play. So yeah, now that we're seeing that these guys I just mentioned are getting top power play deployment, they become guys that you definitely need to consider adding if they're somehow still available in free agency. Like maybe Dzingel and Haula are still there, and I'm even higher on them now than I was last week, now that I'm seeing that they are getting this great power play deployment along with their great even strength deployment.
Yeah, we signaled that you might be interested in Dzingel and Haula on last week's show, and we hope you took advantage. They're probably gone by now, especially after they just had that great game. I think it was Saturday night, but time is getting a little blurry for me. So yeah, Dzingel, Haula, Svechnikov, Hamilton, all for real, all maybe seeing, you know, point or two more than they should have at this point, but there's really nothing to get down about when you see how well that top power play unit is clicking, that they are getting a really good chunk of time with the man advantage, and they're all in good situations at even strength too.
Yeah, like this team is riding just such a really nice top nine. It's something that we talked about in, I feel like it was Minnesota, like 3 years ago or something, where it was just all three of their lines were players worth owning. And it looks like it here, like they've got Stahl, Svechnikov, Brock McGinn, Aho, Niederreiter, and Tara Vinen, then Dzingel, Haula, and Martin Nečas. Like I think there's arguments to be made to add all of these guys. They're all killing it. And yeah, like a couple other players I'll mention, like Jacob Slavin, by the way, riding a 5-game point streak. Even without power play time, this guy is doing just fine. Then you have Jordan Stahl just had a 3-game point streak ended yesterday in a game where he totally made up for it with 3 shots and 8 hits. So I feel like last week we talked about Jacob Slavin as someone who, yeah, goes hot and then goes cold. Seems like maybe now, if he's still somehow there, and we apologize if he's not, like, I think you definitely want to grab him and ride this streak. Like, this Carolina team, to me, seems like something special. And also Jordan Stahl, if he's still out there, grab him, especially if your league counts hits. I think he's going to be good for, you know, around 50-point pace, plus, like, all these peripherals. Like, this is a guy you want on your team.
We said it before about Stahl and Slavin, and, you know, we've seen it before, and we'll see it again. Go ahead and stream them while they're doing well, but don't go making any long-term sacrifices for these guys. These are streams, and they're not players that you're going to want to have on your team all the way through. You're going to expect to drop them again for somebody else, the new hotness in free agency. So just keep that in mind when you are trying to fit them into your roster. Don't go making any big long-term sacrifice to do so.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I'll say I agree with you like 80%. Like, I don't think it's like a guarantee that you're going to end up dropping Stahl or Slavin. Like, I think this Carolina team might just be something special. Like, probably you won't be holding on to them all season, but like, it's possible. So like, yeah, like, don't sacrifice anything to get them, like anything big, but also don't just like drop them because you want to have a stream next week. You know, like, definitely ride this out for as long as it lasts.
Yeah.
And hope it goes, yeah, for months. Okay, and then on the other hand, Brian, I guess I gotta ask, Sebastian Aho owners, do they need to be at least a little concerned about his slow start and him not being on the top power play, or are you still not worried in the slightest? He only has one goal in six games amidst all the rest of the fun, and I know he's taking shots, and so you'll say that, you know, he should be due for a few more goals, but I have to say I am concerned about this development of him not being on the top power play.
Is he really not on the top power play?
I mean, look at the minutes. He's not playing a lot of power play time.
Right, so I see that, and I see that one unit is really clicking, but I think the unit with Sebastian Aho on it is going to consistently have the better chance of scoring, although Dougie Hamilton might be a difference maker if he sticks with his unit, and Aho keeps playing with, I guess it's Jake Gardner right now, but Aho looks really good. Like, there's a couple alarms you can sound right now, right? It's the power play situation, and the fact that he is not scoring any points, right? But Aho's kind of like Tomáš Hertl, who we spoke about at the top of the episode, where you never know it from Aho's scoring totals, but his underlying numbers show a player in Aho who may have found a new gear, and I'm dying to know if it's sustainable. Huge shot rate and expected goal rate gain so far this year for Sebastian Aho. And even, you know, you look at his counting numbers, 25 shots in six games, and he scored on just one. That's okay. His usual shooting percentage would have him sitting with about three goals by now. So let's not get too down on Sebastian Aho. He's doing a lot of things right. He's also only pointed on a single goal of the seven that have been scored while he's on the ice at all strengths. That's going to correct on its own too. He's going to get more involved. He's going to need to be more involved. So zero concerns for me about what Sebastian Aho is capable of. I feel like at worst, I don't see him on power play too. I know that's how the time management is looking, that there's a clear 1 and 2 unit, but I think maybe there's going to be a 1A and a 1B power play unit, and Aho is going to be just fine producing from one of those. Maybe if this 1A, 1B situation does hold, that I'm calling it that even before we've gotten there, but that's what I expect it to be. He doesn't match his 24 power play points from last year. That's a bit of a concern. So maybe he falls a little short of a point per game, but he's still going to be a heck of a player. And if you could buy low at this point by pointing out to somebody that he's not on the top unit, or apparently he's not on the top unit, man, I'd be all over that.
Yeah, I mean, everything you're saying makes sense. I just look at, like, the last three games, we're talking less than 30% of the power play time. So it's definitely not currently a 1A, 1B. I know that's what you're, like, imagining in your head is what they should do. But also, Carolina's killing it. So I don't know if they're going to be taking your advice about how they should be changing up how they're using their power plays. So yeah, I agree with you. Like, definitely, if you could buy low, go for it. But last year, he had 83 points with 24 on the power play. I could see him being closer to a 70-point guy if what happens now holds for the rest of the year, which is still really good. But obviously, there's a difference between a 70-point guy and an 80-point guy. But also, things can change, so you never know. I don't even know what the lesson is here. I'd be a little worried, but not so worried, I guess. And I think you agree. So
that's the lesson for every player this episode.
No, I would be very worried about some of those Minnesota Wild players and Jonathan Quick. And, like, it wasn't for all of them. Yeah, okay. But no, we were supposed to be talking about happy things now. So people at home, try to guess. And Brian, you can try to guess if you don't remember from reading in my notes. Try to guess the number of players in the Nashville Predators that have at least 5 points in their five games. Brian, do you remember?
I do.
Okay, well then I'll just tell everyone's had a chance to guess. Seven of them. There are seven players on Nashville who are at or above a point per game 5 games into the season. This is another team, obviously, with a lot of really good players that you might want to consider looking at if they're still somehow in free agency. Sure, the Preds lost 7-4 to the Kings yesterday, but that doesn't take away from the fact that they are killing it offensively. We've got Duchesne, Forsberg, and Johansson with 9-7 and 7 points respectively. And then Arvidsson, Ekholm, Josie, Ellis, all with 5 points. Brian, are you trying to sell high on any of these guys, or do you think this is all, like, pretty much for real? Would it be too hot a take to say that I think, at least, like, Duchesne and Forsberg, I think both of them are going to breach 80 points this season, and then the rest also looking really good. So yeah, any names jumping out at you as, like, sell high or unsustainable, or are the Preds just this good and they're going to keep getting all these points?
I think it's all a little high. I think it's a little soon to declare Duchesne and Forsberg 80-point players. It's not out of the question. The upside is there, but I'm not convinced it's a likely scenario at this point.
Let's bet on it. I'm so sure about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Duchesne was like almost a point-per-game player last year. I think he was on the Sens. And then Forsberg, you know, he had a down year last year, but he's looking like a real all-star. Like, I'm super stoked about those guys. Sorry to interrupt. Okay, I just wanted to throw that out there. I won't talk about
it. No, it's okay. You projected Duchesne at 67 points in the Almanac, but 3 or 4 games in, you're ready to just add 13?
Yeah. Yep, exactly. You've nailed it.
I love that about you, Elon. I'd like, you know, ask me again next week. Will this still be available next week?
Will what be the bet? Sure.
Yeah. Okay, great. Okay. Give me a week.
All right, so continue. The other guys, though. We got Johansson, Arvidsson, Ekholm, Rosie, Ellis.
Everyone's doing great. Nashville has the third highest shooting percentage in the league at all strengths, but they're also top 10 in expected goals rate, so it's not undeserved, and it's lovely. Like, we're just not used to seeing this from Nashville because of how bad their power play was last year, but their power play is working so far. They've scored on 4 of their 17 power play opportunities, which means they've solved it forever, and they will never go cold on the power play again. Way to go, Predators.
Was that sarcasm?
Sort of. I mean, like, they're good. It was ridiculous how bad they were last year, and there was no way it could last. They're not going to be, like, there's going to be another cold stretch at some point, but it's not going to last the entire season the way it did last year. It's nice to see that power play back on track, because it was a real tough thing to watch for anyone who owned a Predator last year.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're going to go cold, just like any team does. Like, Pittsburgh and Colorado went cold, I'm sure, at times last year, but I think that this Nashville power play may just be one of those top ones. Like, just looking at the names, like, I don't know, it's hard for me not to drool over, like, Duchesne, Forsberg, Johansson, Arvidsson, Roman Josi. Like, that power play should be one of the best.
You know, they had most of those guys on the unit last year, right?
They didn't have Matt Duchesne. 80-point Matt Duchesne, Brian.
It's true. They were using Brian Boyle there instead. So I'm totally in. I'm in on the Nashville power play.
Yeah, and hey, if all these guys that I've said are not available to you, and you still want to take a spin on someone on this red-hot Nashville top six, how about Kalle Järnkrok, who's been playing on the Johansson-Arvidsson line, and he has 3 assists in his last 2 games? Now, Brian, I know he's no Craig Smith, but does Kalle Järnkrok interest you as a Flyer while he's there?
He interests me as not only a Flyer, but a Predator while he's there. And actually, by the way, since you mentioned Craig Smith, rough start to the year for him. His
he
ice
sucks.
Time.
Forget about him. Forget about
yeah,
him.
Yeah, you can forget about him.
Yeah, but Kalle Järnkrok you're into.
Yeah, go ahead. Get Kalle Järnkrok to start the year.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing on a good line. He's on a run right now. If you need a streamer in a deep league, you could do a lot worse, and we'll see how long he lasts in that spot. Obviously, you got to check the line combinations. You could follow at Game Day Lines, and we'll be retweeting all of the morning skate line combos every day, so you could check and see before you add Järnkrok who was skating on that line, you know, in that day's morning skate for Nashville. Let's go to Edmonton, Brian. We talked about Neil and Cassian. Is it Cassian? I've always been saying Cassian, but I heard another podcast call him Cassian. What do you think?
No,
K-A-S-S-I-A-N.
100% Cassian. Yes.
All right. So we talked about James Neal and Zach Cassian last week as Oilers who were taking advantage of their deployment playing with McDavid and Draisaitl, who, by the way, are currently leading the league. I'm talking about McDavid and Draisaitl with 12 and 11 points respectively in 5 games, over 2 points per game so far. Insane. But Brian, we could talk about a couple other Oilers. How excited are you about Oscar Klefbom and his 7 points in 5 games after a 1 goal, 1 assist outing versus the Rangers yesterday? You've been pumping Klefbom's tires forever while he's just continued to disappoint us year in, year out. So this has got to feel good for you. I'm sure you drafted him in a few of your leagues. Think this could actually last and Klefbom can be among the top D-men in fantasy? Or is now like a prime time to try to sell high, shoot for the moon, go for someone like a Klingberg, you know, Tory Krug, like that level if you can?
Things are going really well for Edmonton right now, which is great for Oscar Klefbom, who's been in Edmonton when things are not going really well for Edmonton. So it's nice to see that when they do go well, he's getting in on it. He's been through enough pain and suffering himself, now getting, as you said, Elon, a goal and 6 assists for 7 points in 5 games. One of the reasons for that is he scored once on his 12 shots, which is like, I don't know, it's ridiculous for me to parse these numbers, aside to say he's done a little better than he should have. His secondary assists are like he's getting a couple too many of his points through there, but I'm not complaining. And one thing I'm really excited about is he's seeing a 73% share of his team's power play time so far this season, which is a career high if it holds. The past couple years, he's seen like a 60-65% share, so that's huge. Another fun thing is that Klefbom is seeing a 65% share of the Oilers' penalty killing time. So he's actually lost a couple minutes of 5-on-5 ice time so that he can work on the shorthanded units and on the power play units. He's still seeing 25 minutes of ice per night, but in a bit of a different way than in the past, playing more of a role on the special teams. That penalty kill role could help his block numbers. We'll have to wait and see. He's averaging a couple a game, which is about par for the course for him. So no big upside from that penalty kill role yet. But really, I'm excited for Oscar Klefbom. I think he's going to be able to put up a very, very relevant season this year. I don't know if he's going to be top end, as you said, but I did know that if I pumped his tires and Gosses Bear's tires long enough, I'd be right on one of them.
Okay, but Brian, I asked, if you have Clef Bomb, which I believe you do in some leagues, are you going out to the John Klingberg owner and trying to make that trade happen if you can?
Oh, yeah, in a heartbeat. Okay. I would totally do that. Clef Bomb's peripherals are a little better than Klingberg's, but not enough to make up for... The difference is you can count on Klingberg a little bit more than you can Oscar Clef Bomb, right? And Klingberg has not been the most reliable scorer himself lately. We talked about the Stars' struggles already this year. And yeah, he paced for 58 points last season, which isn't the 70 we'd hoped for, but it's still more than you know you can count on from Oscar Clef Bomb.
Yeah, another thing to consider is that Clef Bomb is a bit injury prone. And also, this Oilers team, while they are 5-0 right now, which is wild, they still might have some struggles throughout the year. And it is always possible that Clef Bomb gets bumped from the top power play for a Darnell Nurse or a Joel Pearson or Evan Bouchard. Or, like, you know, at some point, something like that could happen. You should have more confidence in Klingberg. So yeah, that's always the toughest move to make, right? To actually sell high, buy low. Like, it makes so much sense in theory. But then when you, like, think about it, you're like, oh, but Clef Bomb's doing so well and he's on the top power play. And, like, why wouldn't I just want to ride it? Klingberg is struggling. But that's the struggle. I don't know. It would be hard for me to make that offer. But at the same time, it, my brain tells me that's a smart thing to do.
It's worth at least exploring the sell high options for Clef Bomb. Just make sure, you know, of course, it depends on where you got him in your draft. If you overdrafted him, you might have a hard time selling high. Usually when I try and sell high, I look at the guy I've got, and then I look at who is going two or three rounds ahead of him, and that's my best starting point for finding trade targets.
Wow. I don't know. I never, like, when I get offered a trade, or I never look at what happened in the draft. I feel like the draft is ancient history at this point.
I'm not saying that's the only way to do it. I'm saying if you're trying to figure out who your targets are, it's not a bad way. You look for underperformers who went a few rounds ahead of the guy you're trying to deal.
Yeah. Or just listen to Kevin Carlson. You heard us talk about a whole bunch of defensemen who are struggling. Subban is another one. Brian, you'd offer a Clef Bomb for Subban?
Yeah, I would do that.
Okay, so there
you go. It'd be close, though.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to. I own Clef Bomb because I like Clef Bomb's peripherals. I like that he blocks and hits.
Okay, so maybe you could ask for a Subban and even a sweetener to make the deal worth your while. I mean, the Subban owner might be struggling, especially if they listen to this podcast and heard me talk about how I'm not so sure. But if they probably are just listening more to what you said and that you made them feel a lot better, so that's nice. But yeah, like I said, this Oilers team, 5-0. I feel like this has got to be the biggest shock of the season so far. It is for me. Mike Smith and Mikko Koskinen, both holding their own. Like, Smith has played 3 games. Koskinen has played 2 games, both with goals against averages below 3, which is more than enough to get wins with a team scoring this many goals. Still only 33% and 18% owned in fantasy, respectively. I'm talking about Mike Smith, 33, Koskinen, 18. Is it time to jump on either of these guys? I guess, like, Mike Smith seems to be the front runner to get starts. Like, or do you expect the Oilers to start imploding any day now? It's kind of weird to have the goalies of a team that's 5-0 both available in the majority of fantasy leagues and free agency.
It is. And so you're wondering, okay, do I want this handcuff? Do I go and grab this tandem? And to see if Edmonton's success is sustainable, we can look to their shooting percentage. They're second at 5-on-5 so far this year. And I wouldn't say that's in a terribly sustainable way. They're also second in penalty kill save percentage. That's right. Mike Smith and Mikko Koskinen have combined to stop almost 96% of the shots they faced on the penalty kill, which is rare. You're usually thinking about 85%, somewhere in the 840 to 880 range. They've combined for a 957, and their 5-on-5 save percentage together is nothing at all to write home about. In fact, they're both underperforming their expected save percentage. So I think once we see that bubble burst on the penalty kill, we're going to be seeing a little less friendly numbers from the goalies, and maybe it's going to impact the team as a whole a little more as well. But let's keep in mind, on the bright side, the Oilers have a new coach, Dave Tippett, and he has a reputation for tightening up defense, and he's done that so far. Their 5-on-5 expected goals against rates in Edmonton are now below 2 per game, which is about a 20% drop from the last several years. That's a good thing, and that's what you'd expect from Dave Tippett. So that's going to benefit the goalies, even if they do play below their expected save percentages. At least they're being better protected than they would have been in any of the last several seasons in Edmonton. I'm pretty shocked that the Oilers have started 5-0. I don't know it can hold, especially with all this penalty kill success they've been having. Although I guess it's not going to make or break them, but it is going to make or break their goalie save percentages. The Oilers definitely have my attention, and I will give at least a little more thought to spot starting their goalies on a regular basis, but I'm not interested in Smith or Koskinen on my team long-term yet.
Oh, well, I mean, but the problem is if you say yet, it'll be never, right? If they turn out to do well. Yeah. And I would say Smith, Mike Smith is the one I'm interested in. Like, he has also a history with Dave Tippett. He's, I don't know, played 3 games out of the 5 so far, so we'll see who gets the next start. Koskinen also just concerns me as potentially just not being a good goalie. So yeah, I don't know. I'm grabbing Mike Smith if he's available in pretty much any of my leagues at this point, unless it's super shallow. Like, I would definitely be considering dropping someone like, well, yeah, I mean, like the guys we talked about, right? Definitely Jonathan Quick, but even maybe Dubnyk and Martin Jones, like, you start having to think about it.
No.
I think you might be wrong.
No.
We'll have to see. I don't know. I would actually drop Martin Jones first before Dubnyk.
I'm not in a league where goalies are golden, or I actually am, and I should go check if Mike Smith is available. He's probably not. But if you're looking for a starter, yeah, go get Mike Smith. Go, like, he's proven that maybe, just maybe, he'll work out, and if not, you just cut your losses in a week or two. I really don't have high expectations for either Edmonton goalie. Even if they were on a really strong team with a sound defense, I would still have my doubts about whether I can really rely on Smith or Koskinen.
Yeah, well, last year, I recall you drafted Mike Smith in the cup when he was the starter for Calgary and he burned you. So I guess that's probably why you're especially concerned about recommending Mike Smith. So we'll have to see. We also thought that James Neal probably wouldn't be doing much better after the season we saw from him in Calgary last year, but he sure has turned our heads now on the top power play. He's still rocking it. But okay, how about another potentially valuable goalie that may still be in your free agent list, but perhaps not for much longer? Ilya Samsonov had another great game yesterday. He stopped 24 of 25 in the Capitals 4-1 win over the Dallas Stars. So that's now only 2 games for Ilya Samsonov, but he has a .961 save percentage. He's let in only 1 goal in each of those games. Meanwhile, Braden Holtby is kind of floundered for the most part. He has an unimpressive .868 save percentage through 4 games. Holtby's only 1-1-2 for his record compared to Samsonov's 2-0. Brian, is there any chance Ilya Samsonov can be on the verge of stealing the job, or at least making this a 50-50 situation in Washington? Like, if you're watching these games, it seems like Samsonov might be the better goalie at this point. We've seen Holtby struggle in the past. I wonder how much leash he gets as the Capitals, you know, their window is running out as Ovechkin and Backstrom and these guys are getting older. I think you got to go with the hot goalie at this point, and Samsonov sure is doing well so far, and he comes into the league with a high pedigree. He's not totally coming out of nowhere.
Yeah, we'll have to see more before we really can judge whether he's capable of taking the job from Braden Holtby. But you have to think the Capitals are open to the idea for the reasons you said. They're not just going to sit on their thumbs and say, yeah, Braden Holtby's our guy and we're going to stick by him no matter what, when they have the aging core that they do. They need to strike now. And if Samsonov turns out to be their best option, then they'll go with him. One thing that Samsonov has had in his favor so far this season is he's gotten better protection, interestingly enough, by the Caps team in front of him. Maybe they've been a little more attentive, a little more mindful. Maybe they're a little less trustworthy of him being their backstop, but they've offered him a .935 expected save percentage compared to Holtby's .922 expected save percentage at even strength. So I wonder if that's going to be a factor, and that'll probably even out as the season goes, especially if Samsonov plays more, the team trusts him more, and they start playing in front of him the way they would if Holtby was behind them. Also, keep in mind, Holtby's in the last year of his contract, right? So if the Capitals are trying to figure out what do we do about Braden Holtby going forward, and that answer is dependent on what Ilya Samsonov can offer them in the immediate future, this could be a reason to try and get Samsonov into a whole bunch of games. Look, we've seen Holtby lose the job to Philip Grubauer. It's not out of the question to think he'll lose the job to Ilya Samsonov.
Yeah, so especially if you're in a league that weighs goals against average and save percentage as, like, more than just volume, then I think you definitely want to just grab Samsonov for now and see how it goes. And even if not, like, he's a guy I definitely have on my radar. His 2 games have been against the Islanders and Dallas, who both haven't been scoring many goals this season. So that could be another reason to explain this, like, you know, expected save percentage being high. It might just be the quality of competition, considering it's literally only been 2 games versus Holtby's 4 games. But this is definitely a situation I'm monitoring closely. Brian, if you had to pick right now, who's going to play more games this season, Ilya Samsonov or Jack Campbell?
Jack Campbell.
Ooh. Okay, there you go. Putting his name down.
Who do you think?
I think it could be close. Honestly, I thought of the question, and then I can't even think of an answer. Like, I think that, but definitely that you saying that makes me even more confident that people should drop Jonathan Quick, because when it comes down to it, you still like Campbell more than Samsonov, and Samsonov is probably the better goalie. I don't know. It's hard to say because he's so young. But yeah, I guess if I had to pick one, I'd probably also say Jack Campbell, because I think that Jonathan Quick is worse than Braden Holtby by a significant amount. Okay, let's go to Anaheim. Next, I think that we got to bring up Hampus Lindholm's 4 assists in 4 games so far for the Ducks. We've always liked Lindholm as a solid defenseman, but kind of gave up on his offensive upside a while back. But so far this season, he's been seeing some decent power play time. It looks like they're having 2 even power play units, and he's on one of them. And also, Lindholm is getting involved in the offense, clearly, to some extent. So if you're in a league where D is scarce, would Hampus Lindholm be on your radar? Maybe is he showing a new side to himself, like, you know, like something Jacob Slavin is, or do you think this is totally a blip and just forget about Hampus Lindholm?
This is a blip. It's nice that Hampus Lindholm gets to work on the power play, which is where we've wanted to see him for like the last 5 years. He's not seeing really significantly more work on the power play, though. He's seeing 40 seconds more than he did last season, but the 2 or 3 seasons before that, he had similar minutes and was not putting up a whole lot of production. Maybe his line mates on his unit are a little better this time around, but it's nothing to get too excited about. Plus, he is rocking the extremely fun 133.33% IPP, which means that he's been on the ice for 3 goals, but he's pointed on 4 of them.
So what happens? He passed to someone and then got on the bench and they scored? That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Wow. So that's probably not sustainable. I guess that's fair. Also, shout out to Andre Kasha, who's finally healthy. We've been waiting for this. Hopefully he can stay healthy all season, and he's doing what we expected. He's got 4 points through 5 games, 17 shots on goal. And really, if you look at those shots, he had 1 game with no shots, but then his other games are like 5, 6, 4, and 2. So like generally, this guy is being a high volume shooter. I'm very excited for Andre Kasha this year. If somehow he's still available to you, especially with, you know, the Ducks' great off-night schedule, he's been playing with Ryan Getzlaff. Like I'd even strike, and on the power play, by the way, like the Ducks have been splitting their power plays, like I said, pretty evenly. Lindholm, Getzlaff, Comtois, Michael Delzato, and Hampus Lindholm were one unit, and then the other unit had Raquel and Silverberg and those guys. So yeah, just I really like Andre Kasha, and we liked him before, and nothing has changed. I'm just happy to see it working out for him so far.
I own him on 2 of my teams, and I'm very glad I do. There was one team where he was stuck in my IR because I didn't know who to drop to activate him. And then I was just dying with him sitting in there doing so well. He's out now because Philip Ronick, I was able to shove in there, and I don't mind him being tucked away in my IR. But Andre Kasha, 17 shots over 5 games, fantastic. And he's only scored on 1 of them when he's probably going to do better than that, scoring 1 on every 17 shots the rest of the way. So it's really nice to see him having a strong start to his year, especially because it's never fun when the season begins. I think he was concussed, right, in a preseason game. So it's nice to see that he has not taken long to recover and find his legs and join in and do his thing for his fantasy owners. Go get him. There's no way he's available, but go get him if he is and enjoy all those shots.
Yeah, I mean, he must be available. There's a lot of shallow leagues that we don't think about. I look at some of these percentage owned, like I was looking at some Habs that we'll talk about a little bit later, but like Jonathan Drouin is only owned in 20% or 26% of leagues, and he's got 6 points in 5 games. So I think that Andre Kasha might be available in a lot of leagues. If you watch our Twitter account, Brian, we've got some crazy lineups that people show us where it's like a lineup of all-stars, and then they're like, who should I drop for Victor Olofsson? And it's like, ugh. I don't know. This is hard. Maybe then I say like Andre Kasha. Like these decisions get very difficult when you're in these deep leagues. At that point, by the way, my general advice is stream, stream, stream. If you can, like if you know you're going to have great options in free agency all season long, then maximize your games play. Like if there's a guy playing only 2 games in a week, drop him for someone playing 4 games in a week and get more games, win your matchups. And it doesn't seem like you'll hurt your team very much because you're always going to be able to replace the guy you dropped with someone else who's doing well. That's just some general advice. One guy that's definitely not going to be available in like the large, large majority of leagues for sure, but we got to mention him, Cale Makar. He's up to now 4 power play assists and 5 assists overall in 4 games played. He's had at least 1 power play assist in every single game he's played. Brian, this one, okay, 100% chance he holds his power play spot all season, right? Like we're not even going to talk about a potential challenge from Sam Girard. That's over.
No, he came out of the gates strong, which is what he needed to do. I mean, how hard can it be on that top Colorado power play? But no, I want to give full credit to Cale Makar. Way to go, proving his worth. But what you're about to say, I think, is what I would say, which is that he only has 3 shots in 4 games, 4 hits, 6 blocks. He's not offering you much else.
Yeah, so that's the thing. And so maybe if you're in a peripherals league, it might be time to try to, like, sell high. Like, I like Cale Makar a lot, and if it's a keeper league, I'm probably holding on, and I would need a really good haul for him. But in a one-year league where he's basically only giving you power play assists, you have to think about if that's worth it to you. If it's a categories league and there's, like, seven categories, maybe you ship him out for someone like a Drew Doughty or, you know, like, I don't know, I guess Drew Doughty would be hard to get since he's starting hot. But you might want to think about it. I don't want to go too deep into who to trade Cale Makar for because he's obviously really good and he's going to get you a lot of points. But think about, like, that peripheral production and how that affects your league. But, Brian, you're saying you want to give Cale Makar a lot of credit. I think I deserve a little bit of credit because I was totally, like, disregarding all of the Sam Girard stuff over the offseason. So I'm happy to at least have gotten one thing right so far.
You're the real hero here, Elon.
Yeah, it's me first, then Cale, then I guess like McKinnon and Rantanen and Landeskog and the other people helping to get those points on the power play. Okay, next. Yeah, so I brought up the Habs before. Might be time to see if there's any Montreal Canadiens in your free agent pool, as after their 6-3 win over St. Louis yesterday, they've scored 21 goals in 5 games. A lot of people who may be available in your leagues are producing. Of course, you've got Gallagher and Domi. They're doing well, probably owned. But Brian, how would you rank your interest in adding the following guys, all 31% owned or lower on Yahoo? You've got Thomas Tatar. He's 31% owned, 2 goals, 3 assists in 5 games, 17 shots, which is amazing, same as Kasha. Jonathan Drouin, 26% owned, and he has 6 points in 5 games, 2 goals, 4 assists. Arturi Lehkonen, only 14% owned, and he has 1 goal and 3 assists. Philip Deneau, centering Brian, as I know you like to call it, the top line with Gallagher and Tatar, only 7% owned, and he's got 2 goals, 2 assists in 5 games. This guy, Joel Armia, I don't really even know who he is, but he's 3% owned and has 4 points and 15 shots and 11 hits so far in the 5 games. I'll give some context here before I throw it to you. Here are the lines so far. This is another team that's like really spreading things around. You've got Deneau, Gallagher, Tatar, then Domi with Lehkonen and Jordan Wheel, and then Drouin with Kotkaniemi and Armia. And they also have 2 pretty even power plays: Deneau, Drouin, Gallagher, Wheel, Weber, and then Domi, Tatar, Suzuki, Armia, and Petrie. So yeah, of the guys I mentioned that are doing well and maybe available, who interests you and who do you think is definitely going to slow down?
Well, first off, how about we just take stock of the early returns on our bet, which is who's going to finish in a better position, Montreal or Florida? Montreal has 6 points in 5 games. Florida, 4 points in 5 games.
Oh, so one more win.
I think that's pretty much a win for me.
Yeah, they've won one more game for sure.
Florida's been bad, by the way. They have a -7 goal differential. It's one of the worst in the league so far. But
another reason, by the way, right, to not reach for goalies high. You never know. People thought Bobrovsky's the surest of sure things compared to the other goalies you can grab, so might as well reach to get Bobrovsky. Not looking good so far. But I'll bet you in a month Bobrovsky will be doing well, and then we'll be talking about who's a goalie who's doing well so far. You know, we'll be talking about Carter Hart will be struggling. And, like, that's the thing. That's why I like to wait. You get your goalies late. You pick up Mike Smith out of free agency, and you get, like, 3 wins in 3 games. So you never know. But anyways, yeah.
You say the same thing about Holtby also, right, earlier in the show. Like, people probably invested a lot in him because Phoenix Copley wasn't going to pose a challenge. Anyway, we're talking about Montreal, who their offense looks like it's for real. They rank 3rd in the league in expected goals for at all strengths per 60 minutes. And their shooting percentage ranks just outside the top 10. Usually I look for those 2 numbers to align because teams with creating more expected goals are going to probably convert on more of their shots. So good for Montreal for really coming out blazing. They've got a lot of potential this year, as we've gone on and on about over the last couple months. So you asked me to rank the guys. Well, Tatar, absolutely, I'm interested in. And then it's probably close to me between Deneau and Drouin. I think Drouin probably has the higher upside, but Deneau is going to be steadier. And I also like that Deneau is on the top line with Gallagher and Tatar. Drouin is playing with Armia and Kotkaniemi. Kotkaniemi, you know, coming along, but still not seeing a ton of minutes. And Armia, I forget how he ended up in Montreal, but I know he ended up in Winnipeg or Buffalo as part of the Evander Kane trade. That's how his name stays in my head. Okay, and then Lehkonen and then Armia. Like, in a bangers league, go for it with Armia. 15 shots is fantastic, especially to go with 11 hits. I wouldn't expect him to keep producing big numbers, but it's a really nice start from him. But yeah, Tatar is a must own, and then Drouin and Deneau are pretty close, and then you've got Lehkonen and Armia.
Yeah, I think that's a fair ranking. All guys you want to be at least looking at if you want to stream in a half. And for like Deneau and Tatar, like maybe you're not, or Drouin, right? You're maybe not streaming. Maybe you're holding until they slow down. By the way, this Habs team scoring all these goals is very nice for Carey Price owners, because Price is not doing especially well. He has a 901 save percentage. He's let in three or more goals in every game he's played. Luckily, he's still picking up the wins because of all of these goals for. But imagine if slash when Carey Price sort of settles down a little bit, this defense, which doesn't look that good, but hopefully Price could help make up for it. Like, he could become a really valuable... I'm still into Carey Price, even though he started the season slow, and even though I'm like a little disappointed in his low save percentage to start, I'm happy that he's getting some run support, which is gonna, you know, bode well for his chances in the future if he plays a little bit better. All right, so Brian, I know we're running low on time. I just want to run through a lightning round of some interesting line combinations we've been seeing lately, different than what we expected going into the season, so we could just give some quick takes about these new line combos. I want to start in Vancouver. We expected Michael Ferland to be on the top line with Besser and Pettersson. That's what the beat writers were telling us going into the season. That's over. Most recently, and I'm talking about yesterday's game, JT Miller was playing with Besser and Pettersson, as well as on the top power play in the 3-2 shootout win over Philly. Miller had one goal and three assists in that crazy 8-2 blowout of Quick and the Kings on Wednesday. He's been quiet aside from that, but still gotta be worth owning while he's top line, top power play with these all-star players, right? Though, we would have said that about Ferland, who has one stat assist in four games and is toiling in the bottom six. So things could definitely change, but for now, get rid of Ferland and add JT Miller.
If you still can. He's already up to 5 points in four games. Now, he doesn't take a lot of shots, just five shots in those four games too. But we don't want him to take shots. Get the puck, help create opportunities for Besser and Pettersson, and please get a point on them, JT Miller. He's seen a huge bump in his deployment in Vancouver. He's seeing over 18 minutes a night total, which would be a career high if it stood. Most of his career, he's been like 12 to 15 minutes. He's peaked above 16 minutes a couple times, but over 18 minutes is huge. Just by virtue of his deployment alone, you need to consider adding JT Miller.
Well, yeah, and actually another Canuck that's playing over 18 minutes a game, a guy who I brought up in the Almanac, and I think I got some scoffs, but so far, returns are looking good for Tanner Pearson, who has 4 points in four games. He's playing on the second line, most recently with Horvat and Josh Levo, and Pearson's also like taking a good number of shots. He's got, let me just bring this up here, 18 shots. Oh my god, 18 shots in four games. I guess there was one 11 shot game to start the year versus Edmonton that's buoying that. He also has some hits, like five hits in four games. So yeah, Tanner Pearson looking good, also getting big minutes playing with Bo Horvat. So he's another guy, you know, JT Miller is probably not available in a lot of leagues, but you can maybe get Tanner Pearson if you want to get in on some Canucks action.
Who'd have thought that on this Pearson, Levo, Horvat line that Bo Horvat would be the one bringing up the rear in production? Just one assist in four games, only seven shots too. This is not the Bo Horvat that we know, love, and expected to see this season. So, I'm not getting down on him yet, but it would be nice to see him turn it around sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I know you were stumbling with your words a little bit there, but I think actually it was a pleasant surprise because you said Bor Horvat, which is kind of what he's been so far. And but yeah, hopefully he'll turn that around. So Braden Point is back in the Tampa lineup. He's back from his injury, and he jumped right to the top line with Stamkos and Kucherov. He put up two goals and one assist in the big win over Toronto on Thursday. Then Point went pointless in the 4-2 shocking loss to the Sens yesterday. I still don't get how that happened. But anyway, now with all the studs on line one and Pat Maroon as the only other forward on the top power play with not much offensive upside, is it time for us to say that you probably don't need to hold any other Tampa forwards going into the Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday schedule next week? Like, sure, Andre Palata scored three goals. Anthony Cirelli had that three assist game versus the Leafs, but none of these guys are interesting me that much at the moment. How about you?
I mean, they're okay. Andre Palat hits also, so if you're in a bangers league, that's helpful. He has two goals on four shots in his last couple games. Tyler Johnson riding a three-game point streak that included a five-shot game. So there is depth available to own in Tampa. Like, if you're interested and you have the roster space, go for it. But I hear you. They've loaded up on one line, Stamkos, Point, and Kucherov, which I also don't think is going to last very long. So this might be a chance for you to sneak in and get a Tyler Johnson or a Palat or a Cirelli or a Mathieu Joseph just in advance of whenever they do end up playing with one or more of Point, Stamkos, and Kucherov.
Yeah, that's a good point. They did just lose this game to the Sens. So usually when something disastrous like that happens, maybe you do shake things up. So keep following at game day lines and check and see those Tampa line combos on Tuesday. There might be something different there. But for now, he's Tyler Johnson to me. And that's Y-A-W-N, because I'm not interested in him if he's not going to be playing with any of Point, Kucherov, or Stamkos at even strength or on the power play. Okay, so Chicago sported some new lines in their 3-2 overtime loss to Winnipeg yesterday. Alex Nylander was a healthy scratch. So, people, you know, just last week we were talking about Nylander on the top line with Kane and Taves. No more. Healthy scratch. We'll see when he gets back in the lineup. Kane played with Andrew Shaw and Dylan Strome, and then Taves played with DeBrincat and Drake Kajula. I wouldn't be surprised to see this getting shaken up again, since the Hawks only scored 2 goals yesterday. But still, people should probably be taking note of Andrew Shaw at this point, right? Like, he's been playing with either Strome, DeBrincat, or Strome, Kane in his game so far. And he had a 2-goal game versus the Sharks on Thursday. He has 11 shots and 11 hits in 3 games so far. So if you're in a bangers league and you could get a guy who hits, shoots, and plays with either Patrick Kane or with DeBrincat and Strome, seems like a pretty solid ad to me. So either you definitely need to take a close look at Andrew Shaw. He also had a great run last year when he was getting good minutes in Montreal. So he's not just coming out of nowhere. He's definitely high on my radar. And also, Alex Nylander, let him go. Like, who knows? Like, even if he gets back on the top line, like, come on. Like, he's not going to last there. He'll maybe move around the lineup. Not worth holding, in my opinion.
I agree, especially if he's being healthy scratched. Forget it. Brandon Saad, I'm just going to mention, he has 2 points in 3 games. Always, like, never a bad one-day spot, and you never know if he can string something together. It's the same production that we've seen from Dylan Strome so far, except Brandon Saad, of course, not getting a sniff of power play time, whereas Strome is on that top unit. What was the question, Elon? Nylander? Yeah, you could forget him.
Yeah, but Andrew Shaw, would you take Saad over Shaw, even though Shaw's the one playing in the top six and Saad is in the bottom six?
No, I want to, and I think Saad is probably a better scoring hockey player, but he's not going to get the opportunities to do it. Chicago seems very much over him until, I don't know, he does something that they haven't seen before. So yeah, I will prefer Shaw to Brandon Saad, but I would actually prefer nobody.
Okay, well, you hate Andrew Shaw, so we'll see if he continues to prove you wrong. So far, he's looking good. And the thing is, yeah, Brandon Saad, I was about to say, like, maybe they don't hate him, they're not over him, but maybe they just don't want to use him in an offensive role, but he's actually only been playing, like, 16 minutes in the last game. He played less than 13 minutes in the 2 previous games, so I don't know. It doesn't really... I think Brandon Saad, we're done with him. He's not someone I'd be looking to stream in. Another Blackhawk, actually, I might even be more interested in, depending on your league format, this guy Dominik Kubalik, who has been playing with Saad, and this guy David Kampf, and through 3 games, Dominik Kubalik has 1 goal, 1 assist, 9 shots, and 13 hits. So I don't know. If you want to say anything about this guy, if you need hits and you like Brandon Saad, then you could get the guy playing with him in Dominik Kubalik. So just wanted to throw out his name.
Yeah, we're throwing out. He's seeing his first NHL action after having been drafted in the 7th round in 2013 by LA. Chicago acquired him in January for a 5th round pick, and I guess they signed him to a contract to play this year. So way to go, Dominik Kubalik, for finally breaking in after spending the last 6 years in the Czech and Swiss leagues. We'll see what he can offer.
Way to go, Dominik! Dominik. I was thinking, like, way to go, Donnie from Big Lebowski, and I tried to, like, put it together, and I got Dominik, which...
So close.
Didn't really help. Okay, so speaking of rookies losing their deployment, we just talked about Alex Nylander. Also, Cody Eakin returned to the Golden Knights, where he took over centering the 3rd line, which then pushed Paul Stastny up to the 2nd line to play with Stone and Pacioretty, which meant that Cody Glass got bumped to the 3rd line to play on Eakin's wing, along with Valentin Zhikov. So, not healthy scratched. So that's good for Cody Glass. But yeah, definitely there's a big difference between playing with Stone and Pacioretty versus playing with Eakin and Zhikov. So yeah, Glass, if you were really excited about him before, I would definitely be concerned at this point. Meanwhile, Paul Stastny responded to getting back into the top six with his first point of the year. He scored a goal in the win over the Flames yesterday. Not to be outdone, though, Cody Glass scored a goal himself from the 3rd line, but he only saw 11 minutes and 53 seconds of ice time, way down from his minutes from his first 4 games. So, Brian, if you have Cody Glass on your team and Stastny is in free agency, it's 1-year league, is that an easy/obvious swap to make? Or do you hold Glass to see if he can get back to playing with 8 points in 5 games, Mark Stone? I feel like you just drop Glass.
I think you just dropped Glass, too. I don't think anyone's going to rush to grab him, although Glass is still on a power play unit. with Stone, Stasny, and Pacioretty. So that's nice. All four of them can be a happy family and get together instead of having Stasny and Glass competing for time. But I we'll see. Vegas plays again tonight, the night we're recording this. So we'll see if this configuration lasts for two games in a row. It is telling, though, that Glass had such a low time on ice, and Paul Stasny saw the highest of his season, playing over 19 minutes. Only two shots to show for it. Thankfully, one went in. But if he was dropped in your league, it is definitely time to reconsider adding him.
Yeah, 68-point pace last season for Paul Stasny. Unfortunately, Brian, this is really terrible. This is like the worst thing that could happen in fantasy. I had him. I drafted him. I dropped him at some point. I think it was for Olofsson. So I was like, I don't regret the drop, but I definitely regret, like, I should have dropped someone else and held Stasny, but I hated how he was in the bottom six. Now we're going to the last day of the matchup, and my opponent has added Paul Stasny, and I'm up by like 9 points, and he's got four guys playing, and I've got two, and I just know that Stasny is going to put the dagger into my matchup. It's Brendan in Tier 1 Sweden, and yeah, like, if Stasny, I'll just feel so bad. Like, the guy who I dropped ends, terrible. Yeah, Stasny's been taken down in all of my leagues, so too bad. Don't go get Stasny if you can. Like, Mark Stone is insane. Like, anything, like, I said about him, you know, over the offseason, again, like, this is a mistake I made. I was saying some stuff about how, like, he was good in Ottawa, but how's he gonna do in Vegas, where, you know, there's a lot more people that are producing the offense. Maybe he's not gonna stand out as much. Nah, this guy's standing out like crazy, and anyone playing with Mark Stone definitely benefits. And also Paul Stasny, Pacioretty, no slouches themselves. So let's end the show, Brian, in your hometown of Ottawa, where Vladislav Namestnikov has had a great start with his new team, where he got an apple in his debut versus St. Louis, and then had a big 2-goal, 1-assist game yesterday in the win over Tampa. Plus, Namestnikov played 21 minutes and 40 seconds of TOI. This is a veteran on the team that's being used as such. Clearly, just put him out as long as you can. He ended up on a line with Pajot and Connor Brown at the end of the game after Anisimov got hurt. So do you think Vladislav Namestnikov can continue doing stuff from this spot in the Ottawa lineup, or does he remain completely fantasy irrelevant in your book?
Well, he really showed Tampa for letting go of him by dropping 3 points and, you know, being the dagger against them. So, way to get that revenge, Vladislav Namestnikov. I mean, I don't know. Like, it's good for his fantasy value, right? He played almost 22 minutes against Tampa, which is obscene for a forward. He played 17 minutes against St. Louis. Both of those numbers represent ice time greater than really anything he's seen, especially since his big sort of breakout year a couple years ago in Tampa. So, still, you know, anyone in Ottawa has low relevance. You look at Colin White, who's playing with Brady Tkachuk, has just 2 points in 4 games. So actually, maybe that's where I want to take this conversation and say perhaps it has nothing to do with Namestnikov arriving. But if you're holding on to Colin White waiting for big upside and someone like Paul Stasny is out there, maybe he's someone you should drop by now.
Oh, I would say the opposite. I want Paul Stasny over Colin White, but actually I would say Namestnikov, forget about him. That was just a great couple games. Colin White is the one I would want because he's playing with Brady Tkachuk. Sure, he only has 2 points in 4 games, but that's only 4 games, and Brady Tkachuk is looking really good. And, you know, I like a top. I'm a sucker, Brian, for a top line, top power play guy. So give me Colin White if he's available in free agency.
All right, Elon. Colin White or Eric Staal?
Ooh, like, to me, they're like streamers. Like, it really depends on the league, right? Like, obviously, Staal has more upside for the whole season, but like, if there's a week where Colin White's playing 4 games and Staal's playing 3 games, and I'm trying to maximize, I'd have no problem dropping Staal for Colin White. Like, I'm not into Staal, and I think White has upside to do what Staal could do.
Are we making a bet?
For what, over the next month, or I'm not gonna
the rest of the year?
Well, I don't know. Like, how about for as long as Colin White's on the top line and top power play? Is that fair? Because I would drop him once he falls.
No.
Okay, so then no bet, because that's not what I'm saying.
Okay,
I'm just talking about for now. Okay. I like Colin White while he's on the top line and power play.
Okay,
all right. And with that, Brian, we've gotten to the end of my list of stuff to talk about for this show. Wow, those 2 hours just flew by. And we have people in the chat room. Thank you so much for joining us, like asking us to talk about more players. I wish we could just talk about every player all the time. But this is what we got. We'll obviously get to more of them in next week's show. Feel free to tweet at us at Keeping Carlson. Let us know who you want us to talk about. Or actually, the best way to get us to talk about who you want is to become a patron of Keeping Carlson, because we always make a Facebook event for the show. And then I definitely take all the suggestions very seriously of the patrons asking who they want us to discuss. So you can get that if you become a patron. Also, you get to join this Facebook group where we're all giving each other fantasy advice. It's a lot of fun. We're all trying to help each other out as much as we can. Plus, you get to have that really nice feeling of knowing you're supporting a show that you like. You can just give us $5 a month, the price of a cheap beer for one of Elon or Brian once a month, and we'd really appreciate it. So yeah, check out keepingcarlson.com/patron if you want to support us in that way. Of course, if you're not subscribed to the show, go ahead and do that, like on iTunes or wherever you want to do that. A 5-star review would be nice. This is the part where I'm just shilling for as much as I can. Follow us on Twitter at Keeping Carlson. With that, Brian, I'll just stop talking. Why don't we cue that outro music, and you can go ahead and read us the credits.
All right. This episode of the Keeping Carlson Fantasy Hockey Podcast was presented by Dauber Hockey and powered by our patrons, including our newest one, John. Welcome, John, for being a patron. This episode was researched with help from Dauber Hockey Frozen Pool, Dauber Prospects Natural Stat Trick, Evolving Hockey, Corsica Hockey, Cap Friendly, Charting Hockey, Hockey Reference, Hockey Viz, Hockey Database, Elite Prospects, and Roto World, and Yahoo!
Great job, as always, Brian. Looking forward to doing this all again with you next week.
Until then, keep on keeping Carlson.